with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My goodness, it is my favorite day of the week. It is Monday. Why is it my favorite day of the week? Because after 2 days of enforced silence, well, I'm ready to get back behind the microphone and get back after it, doggone it. And don't we have plenty to work with tonight? Oh my God, the weekend was like a gift from the gods. If that is, the gods are in charge of, oh, I don't know. If the gods are in charge of, yeah, morons! Yes, indeedy. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get over here. Stop fiddle farting around with the cotton candy and the candy apples. You're never going to shoot out all that. Shoot that target out, that little red star with that crooked-barreled BB gun. Get over here! Get over here! Come on over. Come off the midway. Come over to the main attraction tent. It's Moran Monday on the horn. We have morans in abundance. We have, in fact, 87,000 morans standing in 90-degree heat on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on a Saturday for Beckapalooza or White Stock or whatever you care to call it. What they were was a bunch of Beckerheads. And we've got them all for you right here on Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell the morans without this program. You will not believe your ears. You will be shocked. You will be stunned. You will be amazed. For no charge at all, you can slip behind the curtain here and see the morans. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Mothers of small children and pregnant women are advised not to come in. It is that shocking. Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Don't you love the new Moran Monday music? I love the new Moran Monday music. Our good buddy Scott in Sweden sent that along. Just to add, so I wouldn't have to improvise anything with me. I'm so musically benighted. I had no idea that that was March of the Gladiators. But it is. It's March of the Gladiators. I don't know who wrote it. I'm sure Scott will tell me once he hears the podcast. Thank you, Scott, for sending that along. That helps out immensely. But then again, I didn't know, I just thought that was circus music, or carnival music. Whatever it is, I think it was played on a calliope. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. God. But then again, I think we're to be forgiven. Because to the same extent that I, Moran that I am, didn't know that that was the March of the Gladiators, I'm pretty damn sure that the folks attending Beckapalooza, White Stock, whatever, didn't know that this was by Aaron Copland. Because it was played again and again. Well, it was played with some frequency. Yeah, that. At the beckoning. There can be only one. Listen to that, Marvelline. Glenn Beck's playing that Beef It's What's for Dinner music. That, of course, is Aaron Copland's Rodeo. In particular, I do believe it is Hoedown. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did a whale of a job on this, too. When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue. Yeah, no, they didn't know that was Aaron Copland. And to the same extent, when they were introducing their everyday heroes or whatnot, well, they didn't know this was Aaron Copland either, but I sure hope Aaron Copland's lawyers were paying attention. And you know what? Beck is such a miserable cheapskate, he couldn't even hire an orchestra to play this. Are there no right-wing orchestras? No, there aren't. Not unless you want them to all be on banjo and jew's harp. Jug band, washboard. What's the difference between a banjo and an onion? As Lee reminded us one night. Nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. Yeah, a lot of fanfare for the common man there as well. Some things do stick out in my memory from White Stock this past weekend. One of them being one of the opening prayers. I was just blown away. I was not spiritually moved at all during any of this. I was the only speaking in tongues I was doing was a sort of Tourette's-like swearing that was punctuated by Agnes's own swearing, because I've found that the only way I can make her rest and continue to recuperate in bed is if I sit there right next to her and don't get up. And so Saturday morning I made her watch The Beckoning, and she was about to bust into full-on Tourette's. Bob, won't you turn off this black stag and new knot pole frazzleack and black stag and rotten glass and dirt doffin? Honey, this is part of my job. I have to watch this. And I did, but I did. As sick as it may seem, I wanted to watch it. Because, among other things, I knew that I would not get the full sense of it unless I watched the whole thing. And unless, because I knew that the for-profit media would find some way to turn it into something that it wasn't. And they did. I've got an example later on from the paper, American paper of record, the New York Times. I don't know. I don't know if they put on knee pads when they wrote this article or not. I don't know if their ears are sore from Glenn Beck tugging on them. But I watched the whole darn thing, and I was absolutely laid low. I was massacred. It was hopeless. I was laughing so hard, there were tears coming from my eyes, and I sort of got into that that laughter hiccup that kicks in when you're laughing. That one. I had it going full tilt. Because at one point it turned into one moment it was just literally the setup to a bad old vaudeville joke. A rabbi, an Indian, and a Christian walked up to the podium. I mean, that's the setup to a joke. But it was the invocation for Almighty God to bless the event or whatever it was, the one where the rodeo clown that promised a miracle at the end. It's a miracle they weren't all carted off to the Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. That's Odditorium Auditorium. But yeah, he brought up a rabbi, an American Indian, and a fundamentalist evangelical for the invocation. And the rabbi and the Indian stood there, and the white Christian guy did all the talking. Gotta wonder how the rabbi felt about standing there and sort of endorsing the Christian as he was praying to Jeebus. It was an amazing thing.
And I was tweeting along. By the way, if you're on Twitter and you're not following me, you really ought to. I don't do a whole lot of tweeting, but I try to tweet something interesting when I can. But I sat there watching, trying to discern what the real purpose of this was. I mean, everybody knew, you know, there was this orgy. The old Godzilla from Wasilla was there. And she came up and said, she babbled something about, I am the mother of a combat veteran. Never bothering to tell the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that the reason that she's the mother of a combat veteran is that her son got into, a little bit of trouble involving, you know, B&Es and drugs and, you know, the usual run of fun up there in Wasilla. And was given the choice of, son, you can go to the army or you can go to prison. You choose. Hoo-ah, sir! That's right. You're going to Iraq. Good boy. So, in other words, it was demagoguery. It was phony baloney, sort of the Elmer Gantry-esque, the right-wing religious flummery. But through it all, and it was easy to just sit there and make fun of it, and God knows I did with the on the Twitter. It seemed like Glenn Beck read everything that had any sort of hackneyed, trite applicability to the history of the United States that he could put a spin on. At one point in time, I thought he was going to read The Wreck of the Hesperus or something. Maybe the cremation of Sam McGee. Now, I've read The Cremation of Sam McGee on the air. I will not subject you to that again. The Wreck of the Hesperus is just a terrible, terrible old chestnut by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He was a poet and he didn't know it. You could tell it by looking at his feet. They were Longfellows. Shame on me. But really, when he got around to reading the Gettysburg Address, it takes some hubris. It takes a full-on multimillionaire, former drug addict, hubris to stand in front of the Lincoln Memorial and read the Gettysburg Address. Understanding, and that's the thing, early in the proceedings I tweeted, Jesus, just to correct the historical inaccuracies in this thing, it'll take me 6 hours to cover the first 5 minutes. It was that thick. But this would have fit in perfectly. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea. No, wait a minute. Wait. I'm actually reading this like I know how to read poetry. You got to read it like an idiot demagogue like Glenn Beck. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom as white as the hawthorn buds that open the month of May. The skipper, he stood beside the helm, his pipe was in his mouth, and he watched how the veering flaw did blow the smoke now west, now south. Then up and spake an old sailor, he had sailed the Spanish main, I pray thee put into yonder port, for I fear a hurricane. Last night the moon had a golden ring, and tonight no moon we see. The skipper he blew whiff from his pipe, and a scornful laugh left he. You know the Wreck of the Hesperus, right? It had 19th century people weeping for 100 years. And frankly, I'm surprised that Glenn Beck didn't just put it right out there for the Beckerheads. But he didn't. Michael chiming in something just to add to the delicious irony of it all. Michael in Sebastopol, California. Who refers to himself, I love this, as the Abominable Sonoma Man. Man, I said that without stumbling. Ooh, it's going to be a good week. Aaron Copeland, Michael says, was a homo and commie simp. Bless him. Damn Beck and these freaks. But that's okay. They didn't even... The name Aaron Copeland had no meaning for the 87,000 Beckerheads. Because, like I said, all they knew that was that beef music. Marveline, all of a sudden, I'm kind of hungry. See if one of them hippies down there has got anything besides falafel for sale. I don't care, even if it is that gyro garbage. I'm wanting some beef. Let's see. Hey, Bob, I'll give you one guess as to the writer of the Gladiators March. I'll give you a hint written in 1886 by an American composer who thereafter was known as the March King. That's Sousa? Because Sousa was the March King, right? John Philip Sousa? But I kept... Granted, the silliness was enough to keep one busy. And you had to sort of catch the thing in its entirety to really get the gist of what I think actually happened on Saturday. And I'm either dead wrong and miles away from where this really was, or what the intent really was, or I'm kind of pretty damn sharp. Because, see, he did, Glenn Beck, did do, and shame on me, I'm standing, sitting here, I'm waiting, you know, I'm gonna spend a half an hour talking about him. But he spent 3 hours, appropriating George Washington, appropriating Abraham Lincoln, appropriating Martin Luther King, on and on and on. He appropriated Moses. There was actually even an African-American minister who came to the podium and called Beck, I'm not kidding, the Son of God. I've looked all over the interweb tubes today, and I apparently I'm the only one who was even remotely surprised by that. But I was. I was sitting next to Agnes there, and we were watching it. And Glenn Beck, you are the Son of God. And what? And Agnes sort of, huh? Because, you know, there's a lot of pain medication coursing through Agnes's system, so she's pretty tranquil right now. And when I yelled what, she kind of jumped. But no, I heard it. It really happened. I haven't seen that many token African Americans on stage since the Road Company of Roots went through Birmingham. But I sat there. And, yeah, there was, like I said, there was the whole business about SOW, Special Operations Warrior Fund. You know, we talked about that. It turned out it turned out that, you know, all those donations went to Special Operations Warrior Fund, and they had a mother of a slain Special Operations Warrior, and somebody else who was the president of the organization's getting up and doing hosannas to Glenn Beck. But they didn't tell the crowd. Oh, no, they didn't tell the crowd that Beck would be skimming every dime that came in until the complete costs of the event were paid for. and that only after the event was paid for would the Special Operations Warrior Fund get any money. As it turns out, the thing cost, the way it shook out, I think the Special Operations Warrior Fund got about $1 million out of the approximately four that were raised. But don't tell the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers they think Glenn Beck's a patriot. Never mind that Glenn Beck had enough money from his own salary to have paid the thing out of his own pocket. No, no, no. You don't do that. Never touch the principal. Don't spend your money when you can spend somebody else's. That's what morans are for. God put sheep on the earth to be fleeced. Really? So there was this Special Operations Warrior Fund stuff, and there was a lot of praying, and Beck, you know, the rabbi, the Indian, and the evangelical, and that was funny. And there was the African American minister who called him the son of God, Beck. About which the for-profit media is writing exactly nothing, unless you've got a link that I haven't seen. I looked yesterday, I looked today. But then again, I don't expect other folks to come up with this, because they don't have the ear. You know, it says in the book, for those who have ears, let them hear. For those who have eyes, let them see. And the for-profit media in this country are largely a group of blind and deaf people. Because they were not raised in the evangelical fundamentalist tradition, as I was, and therefore they do not speak the language. Oh, but sugar, I speak the language. And, you know, this isn't any of that egomaniacal with, you know, half my talent on loan from God or half my brain tied behind my back or any of that BS. It's just a fact. I see and hear things and pick up things that others don't. Because I pay attention in a different way. And I listen for the symbology. And I listen for the code. And it was there if you cared to listen for it. Like I said, he co-opted George Washington. He co-opted Abraham Lincoln. He co-opted Martin Luther King. And yeah, he went and he co-opted Moses. Now, granted, when he started mentioning Moses, I had Yul Brynner's voice in my head. Moses, Moses, Moses. I am thinking this Moses shall have been a fool. Who is this Moses? But even through all of that, I was still listening, and I was still paying attention. And I doped it out. I figured it out. And then it was sort of confirmed for me yesterday. Not that, you know, I'm looking for secret messages in my Cheerios or words to be spelled out in my cereal bowl by the alphabets just sort of randomly floating together. But it's unavoidable. If you know the code, if you speak the language, if you know how to appeal to the existentially bereft mass of Americans who are looking for some sort of an answer and getting none. If you know, if you understand that the right wing will never, ever appeal to anyone's reason or appeal to anyone's intellect, that the heart and soul of right wing demagoguery is an appeal to emotions, just like inside a Pentecostal church. You don't go to Pentecostal church for scriptural criticism and a close inspection of the text. You go to see the hopping and hear the hooting and the hollering and watch the rolling on the floor and the spit flying and the tongue speaking and the prophesying.
That's what you got. And that is what a great deal of America wants. Because a great deal of America has been desensitized to logic or reason. A great deal of America has been desensitized to any notion of being cognizant of the need to attend to their own well-being in order to provide for the common good. There were a lot of dog whistles being blown on Saturday that I would say 99% of liberals in America couldn't hear. But I heard it. And I saw it. And just about toward the end of the thing, I looked over at Agnes and I said, I'll be damned. Now I know what this is all about. What that thing was a normalization of the Mormon religion. There stood Beck in either a bulletproof vest under his blue button-down shirt, with quite possibly his magic underwear on display as well. But yeah, he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and there were snipers on the roof of the Lincoln Memorial. Honest to God, what a conceit. What a conceit to think that anybody would want to shoot Glenn Beck. What a waste of lead. But there he was, and you could see it, and you could make it out. And he was, listen. If it was just a sort of meaningless pseudo patriotic flim flam the pageant, then it's utterly meaningless and devoid. It was just sound and fury signifying nothing. But if you consider, for instance, that Glenn Beck's religion only condescended to declare that brown-skinned people of African descent were actually human beings in the mid-1970s. And if you understand that there is a great deal of mistrust of Mormonism in the United States today, and if you understand Glenn Beck's history and you know that he only took off like a bottle rocket after he'd done a little handshake deal with some Mormon uppity mucky mucks, then you're able to see this thing for what it was. It was a normalization of Mormon religion, or an attempt thereof. And while it was said to have been apolitical, you know, there was plenty of politics in that crowd of Beckerheads. Wasn't it interesting that Sarah Palin was invited to speak, but Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman wasn't? In all of that militaristic, jingoistic right-wing fervor, wouldn't Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman's YouTube boat speech have just gone over like gangbusters? Sure it would have. But Michelle Bachman did not fit within the scheme of things. Because we make a mistake when we think that all evangelicals, all fundamentalists are the same. They're not. For instance, there's the brand of evangelical fundamentalist that Sarah Palin is that goes in for exorcisms and being blessed by the witch outcasters from Africa.
And then there's the Michelle batshit crazy Bachman brand of evangelical fundamentalist that is of a different stripe altogether and still wholly mistrusts Mormonism. I guess I shouldn't say Mormonism. I should refer to it by its proper name, the LSD Church. But that's what this was. It was a normalization with lots and lots of Jesus and never a mention of him walking among the Indians who were actually the offspring of the lost tribes of Israel, you know, Jews in America before Columbus. There's no mention of that. There was no mention of Planet Kolob. There was no mention of the fact that in the Mormon pantheon, Jesus and Satan are brothers, twin brothers, I believe, but brothers nonetheless. There was no mention of any of that. It was all Moses and Jebus and God and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and on and on and on and on. And Native Americans and rabbis. You know, it was interesting that for all the religious talk out there, the world's second largest religion was not mentioned at all. You think, maybe you think I'm crazy. Listen to this quote. Now, this is just the words. This is not the audio or anything, but this comes from, Becca Palooza, White Stock, Saturday. America today begins to turn back to God. For too long, this country has wandered in darkness. Look forward. Look west. Look to the heavens. Look to God and make your choice. Really? Look west? Now, if you were to look to the, if you were looking for the Holy See, the Mother Church, you'd have to look east, not west. If you were looking to a new dawn, you would look east to the rising sun, not west. If you were looking toward the home of the single largest Protestant religion on earth, you would look south to Nashville, Tennessee, and the home of the Southern Baptist Convention. There's only one reason for looking west, and that is the temple at Salt Lake City, Utah. To the best of my knowledge, I am the only one who has actually noted this. Can't, you know, well, you can't look east because, yeah, that's Rome and that's Romish and that's papacy. But it's also sort of, you know, generally toward Mecca. And I mean, there was not a word about Islam. Not a word. You know, it is funny that Michelle Bachman would, you know, her YouTube boat story, like I said, would have gone quite well. And she was there. She was there holding her own little rally out in the grass somewhere. But that's what it was. It was a great big pageant normalizing Mormonism for Americans who don't trust them because they shouldn't be trusted. Of course, I feel the same way about any religion that wants to run a government. And he got a bunch of people who weren't even Mormons to pay him to do it. Man, that is a beautiful dodge. He put Fields' Three Commandments to work and made them go like clockwork. One, you can't cheat an honest man. There was not an honest man in all those 87,000 people. Because they had, by God, been told that there was going to be a miracle. Well, the only miracle was that they got out of that place with their shirts still on. You can't cheat an honest man. Right? Right. Two, never give a sucker an even break. It was there in the twisting of George Washington, in the manipulation of poor slain Abraham Lincoln, in the co-opting of murdered Martin Luther King. Oh, the suckers never got an even break. And without ever having said the word Mormon, he attempted to make Mormon more normal for the rubes and the hoi polloi, thereby establishing Commandment 3, don't smarten up a chump. And then, lo and behold, on Sunday, yesterday, I just happened to be scanning channels. And I ran across the McLaughlin Group. And what did I see? But the first question out of John McLaughlin's mouth was, of all the Republican contenders and potential contenders for the 2012 presidential nomination, who was the greatest beneficiary of Beccapalooza? Whitestock. And McLaughlin immediately answered his own question by saying Mitt Romney. Willard Romney! So I guess I can say that there was one guy who sort of got it. But on our side, I haven't seen anybody note that it was a great big commercial for the Mormon religion. Email rolling in. Maura says, when I saw Beck remove his tie, I was sure that he was going to put on a Roman collar and continue his full-out Father Coughlin. Oh, he was doing Father Coughlin all right. Jim asking, son of God, are you kidding? The whole thing reminded me of the Nazi Bund meetings in the 30s with Fritz Kuhn. And Palin, where did her son fight? Please answer. He was posted to the somewhere along the way, allegedly posted to the Iraq theater. I'm sure he never heard a shot fired in anger. But yeah, the preacher really called him. And Glenn Beck is the son of God. He said it, not making it up. With regard to an evangelical code. David in Tennessee noting, Lordy, I do wish Willie Morris was still at the helm of the old gray lady. Wouldn't he be having some big fun commenting on today's state of journalism vis-a-vis the Becks of this world? Oh, damn straight. And I guess, I hope I'm not inflating my own sense of self-worth. I hope that's what makes this worthwhile. Because nobody will have this. And frankly, if you do hear somebody subsequent to the airing of this program mentioning that it was a clearinghouse for Mormon normalization, well, you may just have to wonder if somebody's listening. because there are thousands of you. Oh, we're not up to that million mark yet, but there are thousands of you. Indeed, indeed. Bob, I didn't hear any mention of the evil Dr. Yacoub and the giant flying saucer. Oops, wrong made-up phony baloney religion, Ron and Raleigh. Oh, God. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we are open for nominations. I've got a nomination here from Marty. And he said, Moran Monday nominations. I have two, both from the baseball St. Louis Cardinals. I wish to nominate first baseman Albert Pujols and manager Tony La Russa, both of whom attended and spoke at the whatever they called that thing at the Lincoln Memorial. Also, for La Russa, he supports Arizona's SB 1070 when Pujols claims to oppose it. Who knows? Also, I think I'd like to nominate the person who sent an e-hate mail to Shannon Moore. Oh, dear God, I saw that thing. I saw that note. Apparently, and I just love Shannon. I got to meet her in Vegas, and she's a great person. And over at her blog, she posted under the title, Best Hate Mail Ever. Dear Michael, I mean Shannon Moore. I think you're an ass, a big fat ass with a big fat mouth. Get a life, get a job. I don't believe you're a woman. I think you're some fat loser sad sack posing as a man on the internet. Your man boobs and beer gut must hang past your knees. And it goes on like this for paragraphs on end. I'm so jealous I could just squeal. But then again, there's a reason I don't put up with wingnuts on this program. They're fun to fight with and it makes good theater. But it doesn't make for good community, and it doesn't make for a good sense of family. Not in the least. But it's Moran Monday on the Horn, and there are lots of Morans out there. I got one from New Jersey that I just love. I've been hanging on to this one, saving it for today. And I'm sure you will have more of your own. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. K flies through the ring. Don't be late. Let us K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. Undertake on solid ground. Ding ding, some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill. We'll be right back.
and Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob, and we will go directly to the phones for further explications, ruminations, explanations, nominations, and recriminations. Let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
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 Hello? Is this Bob?
It certainly is.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm calling from Delaware.
Well, hi, Megan. How are you? You're on the air. Well, you'll have that sometimes, I suppose. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, did you catch the bit from the Vickerhead where he plagiarized Obama?
Oh, you mean where he ripped off the speech?
Yeah.
What do you want? We're talking about Atne Ute Aitbre, if you own a what I ain't may. I have to talk in pig Latin sometimes just to keep the little wing nuts in the corners on their toes.
You know, it's just the only thing I can. Okay, that and, you know, the bit with him showing up in a bulletproof vest. I have one comment.
Susan, I don't think he would have appeared more conceited if he'd shown up in a Bob Mackie gown.
Yeah, because let's face it, he's not worth the gunpowder worth blowing to hell.
Or 2 feet across the stage.
No liberal would even bother to blow him up. He's not worth it.
And beyond that, we don't do that kind of thing. That's their side.
Yeah, the only thing that's liable to knock him over on that stage was the gales of laughter.
Well, indeed.
And I don't think that's illegal just yet. I know they're working on it, but no. As yet, I understand that's still legal. God, the man is so unbelievably good. Oh, God. I fully expected him to spread his legs, produce his very own son, and name it Jeebus.
Well, why? He was named Jeebus as it stood.
No, as far as he's concerned, he's God. Haven't you figured that out yet? You know what makes this really funny? You know, and I agree with your hypothesis about getting the Mormon religion more or less mainstream. But what's really funny, and a lot of callers to Stephanie Miller's show who are devout Mormons and who know quite a bit about the Mormon religion, including me, this man knows absolutely nothing about the Mormon religion. You don't know shit.
Probably not. But you know what? That's the way that's the way most religions like their adherents. You know, there was a reason in the first millennium and a half of the Roman Catholic Church that they did everything in their power to keep their parishioners from actually reading the Bible. That was for the priests to do. You can't have people getting all studious with their holy book, because the next thing you know, they'll actually be asking questions. I mean, really, I mean, come on, just for a minute here, Susan. Really, a guy in upstate New York used a couple of rocks and looked into his hat and got a religion from it?
That's no sillier than the one anybody else has come up with.
Yeah, but the thing is, that happened in the 19th century, not the first century B.C.
They're all for roots. Hey, a con is a con is a con. whether it started in 1 BC or the 19th century, it's still a con. And I'm sorry for people who believe are devout followers. I am a devout follower of my religion, but it's still a con, and I know it.
Well, it was George Carlin who said it best, I think. He said, religion is like a lift in your shoes. If it makes you walk a little taller, walk a little more comfortably, that's
whatever,
fine for you.
Whatever works.
Yeah, but don't go nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives.
Exactly. And whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah, that's John Lennon, of course.
Just don't go making it into law. And these guys are trying to make this place into a theocracy, and that's why I object to vehemently. It's plastered across everything they say. They want a theocracy. And the first thing that they need in a theocracy is an ignorant politician, which is why they want to get rid of the Department of Education. They want people. Their ideal is people who cannot read. If you cannot read, you cannot challenge their pronunciations that this is from God. God told you to believe this way.
And if you're stupid, who are you to challenge that? But the one thing that really blew me away, because the preacher had to expand after he called Beck the son of God. He had to say, and you're all sons of God. At which point I realized that very subtly, and I'll mention this to you, Susan, because I know you'll get it. There was one more guy being ripped off at Beckapalooza.
Yeah, Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted, if the guy says grok, I'm going to put the straw in the tequila bottle. There's only so much my sobriety can take.
Yeah, there's only so much.
Jesus, you know what? The next thing I'm looking for is for these people to hook up with the Dianetics crowd. You know, the Scientologists.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my word. Can you just imagine?
The thing is, the Dianetics crowd are...
Thou art God, and thy feetins are out of whack.
Yeah, the problem is, and I admittedly know very little about Dianetics, but from what little I do know, it's very complex.
It's complex like a Rube Goldberg device is complex, Susan.
That's not something you want the peasants trying to learn. They're not them.
No, and again, the Scientology is set up in such a way that you've got to pay a lot of money. Scientology is religion married to Amway. You've got to pay a lot of money in before they get you all the way to the top, before you start approaching the upper echelons, and they let you in and go, shh, don't tell the rubes.
Here's the secret.
It's all a fraud. It was no good. It was no good for me that early in the years of my developing brain that I got hold of Tom Robbins's Another Roadside Attraction. If you've never read it, you should. I think it was the second book he wrote after Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, or maybe before Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. But it has to do with the sudden and entirely unwanted rediscovery of the body of Jesus, who, as I think Tom Robbins said, was looking no better than he did the day they took him down off the cross. And that's the thing. Look, come on. Does anybody actually believe that Pope Benedict believes the hokum that he hustles? Come on, please. Does anybody believe that a Roman Catholic priest with his penis in the mouth of a 10-year-old believes the miracle of the Mass? Please. Does anybody believe that the elders of the Mormon Church out in Salt Lake City actually believe that Joseph Smith dug up some magic golden tablets and read them by looking through his hat with a pair of rocks? Honest to God. And frankly, we can add into the list. Does anybody actually believe that an invisible sky god came down and raped a 14-year-old virgin and created his son and then killed him off to prove he loved the world?
Yeah. Or an angel Moroni came down and pointed the way to...
Right. See, I think Joseph Smith was having a laugh on his followers by naming his angel...
Either that or he was tired in a kite.
No, he was having a laugh because he named the angel Moron. Moroni.
That's entire gospel.
That ain't Moroni. That's Moroni. And at its core, every religion is having a bit of sport on its adherents. You know, the Exodus, you would think that if that many people went through the desert over 40 freaking years, somebody would have lost a sandal. There is not one shred of archaeological data to support the existence of the Exodus. Not one. Ask Eugene Finnerman. He knows.
Well, I'm an archaeology buff, and despite the incredible records that the Jews kept during that time, and despite the incredible records that the Romans kept during that time, you can go through every one of those records of both peoples. And there is no record of a carpenter of Nazareth who was crucified.
No, there are indirect references. I forget which Roman historian it is that says that the fire of Rome that Nero was alleged to have set was blamed upon the followers of Crestus, Chrestus, which would be a Latinization.
Yeah,
a Latinization of Christos.
That's long after the so-called crucifixion.
Oh, right. And you know, fundamentalist, the phony baloney evangelicals like to point to the writings of Josephus, but even the writings of that paragraph in Josephus, any textual critic will tell you that that is an addition to the book.
Yeah, and it's long after the fact. So there is no
contemporary, right?
Primary reference, even though they counted people up one side, down the other. The Romans counted people up one side, down the other. There is no reference. It's like, you know, he was the man that didn't exist as far as those records were concerned. Now, that can be one of several different causes. A, he did never existed. B, somebody went in and erased him. C, divine intervention.
Well,
and there's also
even the books that the Christians hold out for, in particular, the Book of Mark. Everybody who knows anything about text knows that Mark ends at Mark chapter 16, verse 8. And it ends, or maybe it's not verse 8, no. It ends at verse 5. And entering into the sepulcher, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And that's it. That's where it ends. Everything else is made up. Added a couple or 300 years later. All the business about Jesus wandering around and going to have tea with Mary Magdalene and all that, it's not there. By extension of the same idea, Susan, the same thing obtains with all the phony baloney history. Glenn Beck having a fit about a star on the Washington Monument and just making stuff up. But again, for those of us who are interested in finding out how they are doing their evil work, it is absolutely imperative that we understand and we comprehend that we, and this sort of ties into this sort of ties into what David from Maine has been saying of late. And that is that, you know, we're going to snicker about them and we're going to talk, oh, look at the idiots. But we fail ourselves and we fail the people that we care about when we don't look to understand that when we oppose their irrationality with rationality, that when we oppose their emotionalism with our reason, we lose. We lose. We have to come up with our own emotional appeals to people, because appealing to their intellect ain't never gonna get it. You know, and you know what? I mean, there's a million ways to explain that. I know intellectually. There is no doubt in my mind intellectually that I need to quit smoking. I must quit smoking. It will eventually kill my ass.
Yes, it will.
But you know what? That intellectual knowledge ain't worth jack up against my addiction.
Maybe I ought to send you a tape of Donald breathing.
No. Again, that is... You're proving my point, Susan. That is an intellectual appeal to something that exists on a purely irrational level.
Actually, I know exactly how you're feeling, because for years people told me, you need to quit. And for years, I did not listen to them until one day I said, I've had enough of this. It's time to quit. And then I was ready, and then I quit. All on my own.
And some can do that, and some cannot.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand very well that the only way I'm going to ever quit smoking is if they build me a Betty Ford clinic and I get to check in for 6 days and go pet the ponies like Rush did when he was supposedly getting off the junk. Because that's what it is. It's junk.
Yeah.
It's an addiction that's not even any damn fun. Granted, I love the first one with the cup of decaf in the morning and one after a good meal or a night, you know, that's great. Everything else is just window dressing. But you know what I mean. Susan, thank you. Thank you for adding to the discussion this evening. And, yeah, you know what? You do know the history of Mormonism.
Yeah, and there is a way to counter.
Is it intellectual?
No. It's pure passion. You keep your goddamn hand off my Constitution, or I am going to, by God, punch you right in the face.
You know what? Yes, that works with them. They understand direct threats to they understand that.
That's my Constitution.
And you leave it alone.
You keep your rotten hands off it.
Bingo.
You want to change it? There's a process. You follow that process. In the meantime, fail.
Exactly. Susan, have a great night.
You too, and give my love to Agnes.
I sure will. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon and rolling right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Did you get my email?
I did.
What did you think? About what I said.
Oh, about it being diabolically clever?
Yeah, and...
Yeah, yeah, well, just so everybody else can be in on this, too, Juanita said, it was to me like a revival meeting provoking tithing, proselytizing, getting down on your knees in prayer, and taking up an offering. Yes, early in the production, he asked with all with cell phones to call in a donation for the Children of Veterans. That was the Special Warriors Operation Fund.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the name of it.
And but see, Juanita, this goes to prove my point. You speak the code, too. And you said it was like many church services, lasted 3.5 hours. I recall being in church till 2 or 3 p.m. and not leaving because of guilt feelings, and most of these people seem to be standing, lordy, lordy, lordy. And there you go.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Something is really going on. I mean, it was slick, too.
Sure, it was. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt it was slick.
Yeah, it was slick. And by the way, Bob, you're wrong about the amount of people there, because Bachman wouldn't lie. She said there were 1 million people.
Well, there goes that miracle math made easy.
Right. That woman would never tell a story, would she?
Oh, golly, no.
Oh, me. But they're all a bunch of crooks and liars. And I said, boy, that guy is some piece of work.
Well, you know, there's one other thing that was at work here, too. If you listened very carefully in the still small moments in between the ranting and raving at this thing, you could hear in the distance Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage screaming.
Screaming?
Yes. Because they were, oh my God, this has to be, they spent all day Saturday, those three, eating their own livers. Oh, the jealousy.
I didn't hear them. Yeah, I was thinking about that jealousy deal. I thought about that. I was thinking about Rush, you know.
Because it's like David from Maine mentioned. You know, they tried it with Rush to get him on TV. They tried to get Savage on TV. And only with Hannity and only with Beck. And now Beck has surpassed Hannity. That's what this has done. In addition to being a great big so-called normalizing of Mormonism, this was Beck telling Hannity and Limbaugh to move over, that there's a new right-wing sheriff in town.
Yeah. Somebody I heard on one of the news programs said it sounded like he was running for the office of God.
But the thing is, the so-called mainstreamers have no conceptualization of what it's like to be at a tent meeting or a camp meeting or a dinner on the ground.
Yeah.
You recognized it right away. I did, too.
That's exactly what I thought when I was sitting there, because he's talking about getting down on your knees, and he's talking about tithing, and he took on an offering right away.
Right. He was speaking the evangelical language, Juanita, and doing so as a so-called practicing Mormon. He was trying to seamlessly connect the two, and the one person who benefits from that, and the only person who benefits from that, is Willard Romney.
Oh, yeah. That was a good analogy, yeah.
And you see, Beck made a deal, and I mean, this isn't speculation. I mean, Beck made a deal and has talked about it. It was the Mormon superstructure that catapulted him into his position. And so he's paying back to do.
I've wondered about that. I wonder what they... Doesn't look too good for them, does it? Doesn't reflect well on them. The leaders, whatever.
Yeah.
But he said one thing that I noticed. I don't know if you said it or not. It's hard to hear over the, you know, over the phone, but... You know, when you're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he said something about, you know, about Jesus being over in the Middle East, and said, and also over here. And see, that's one of their teachings, that he also appeared over here.
Did he say that? I missed that.
Well, he had a little bit of subtlety? Subtlety, yeah. I just noticed it because I'm aware, you know, of that. But there was, he just mentioned it one time and said, and over here too. And I thought, whoa. But I'm going to tell you, there's something really strange. I mean, you want to talk about the Bible, but remember the Antichrist? A bunch of them. This guy, because he's going to deceive. I know he's going to deceive a lot of these church people. And another thing is, like, years ago, Pat Robertson, he had somebody on there telling on his, when he had the broadcasting system, was talking about the Mormons, and they refused. They didn't want to run it. And Pat Robertson and them didn't. And you know, it was also the same way about Reverend Moon.
You know what's fascinating, Juanita, is that I said that no one had noticed what Beck was doing, but that's not entirely true, because the right wing, an element of the right wing, understood what he was getting at. It's fascinating that a so-called conservative writer and founder of a thing called Worldview Weekend, a guy named Brannon House, wrote the following about Glenn Beck. He said, "While I applaud and agree with many of Glenn Beck's conservative and constitutional views, that does not give me or any other Bible-believing Christian justification to compromise biblical truth by spiritually joining Beck." And then David Shedlock, also an evangelical blogger, said, "Jesus Christ's church has universally rejected Mormonism's anti-Trinitarian theology and its claim that mortals may become God."
Yeah, they don't believe in a lot of things that the... Well, I hate to say this, but about the Christians, regular Christians, too, you know. They've got their own theory about...
Oh, yeah, no, they're nuts, too. This is all taste great versus less filling,
you know,
Juanita.
The devil is Jesus' brother.
Yeah, yeah, the Mormons believe that, yes.
Yeah.
During, you might find this interesting, during Beckerstock, on Saturday, during the rally, a group issued a press release via something called Christian Newswire, okay? And, on the Christian Newswire, this outfit, Christian Investigator, said, wait, you're going to love this. "Glenn Beck promotes a false gospel. However, many of his political ideas can help America. Our country was founded on Judeo-Christian values." Of course, we know that's a lie. "Mormonism is not a Christian denomination, but a cult of Christianity." Well, they're all cults, frankly. You want a cult? Let's try the Southern Baptist Church on for size. "The country needs to get back to the simplicity of the Bible. The reason our country is in bad shape is that ministers, for the most part, do not share the truth." There's that word. You know, you'll notice they say that they don't share the facts.
Uh-huh.
"Many endorse false gospels, including Mormonism. Christians need to preach the truth in Christ's love. Sometimes the Lord's way is not the most popular way." Oddly enough, I don't know how they can write that, considering that 80% of America consider themselves as believing in some sort of God. "True Christianity can appear to be intolerant. However, the Bible is always right on major moral issues. In the United States, we need a spiritual revival based on the truth of the Bible. Our country is in a balance. Without a true revival, we are doomed. It is good for people to get together to stand up for our country. However, if we are to have a true revival, we need to preach the true gospel, rain or shine." And this is some Mormon beliefs. One, God has a physical body and so does his wife.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah. And she's eternally pregnant.
You know, it sucks to be her, I'll bet. And then two, no Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are three separate gods. People can become gods. Three, Jesus was created by sexual union between God and Mary. Four, Jesus was married. Five, Jesus' death does not atone for all sin. Six, baptism for the dead. Seven, African descendants were not granted Mormon privileges until 1978.
Yeah.
Eight, Jesus and Satan were spirit brothers.
You heard about them in the highest heaven, right?
Oh, yeah.
The way the original teaching was?
Yeah.
The only way they could get to the highest heaven, the black people, were to be the servants. They couldn't have their own planet with their own eternal pregnant bride. They could be there to serve, and that was it.
Nice.
I tell you, I've studied a lot of different ones, and of all the ones, I think these are the Looney Tunes. One of the Looney Tunes, I know. But, you know, they seem to be good people, but... And, you know, they believe that the only way to pay for murder is to be executed, because that's the only way they'll be forgiven. If they murder... You remember Gilmore that wanted to be shot?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But they'll have, if they're really good, I don't know what's going to happen to poor Marie Osmond, you know. I think something must have happened there, because she moved to Hollywood And she said she'd never go back to Salt Lake City. You know, she got divorced again. And then she had one of her daughters came out as gay. And then she had another son. She had a son that recently committed suicide. So who knows what kind of problems they had. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, and it's not just Mormons. It's like you said, if you listen, what I was talking about one night was that about traditional kill you. And I'm talking about the things that we believe, that we've heard since we were children, and we think they're the truth. And they are not necessarily true. Now, I was always like, when I was growing up, the thing about, of course, when I was little, my parents weren't in the church, you know. My mother had never been. But anyway, I always heard that, wait a minute, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, about what you could do on Sunday and what you couldn't do. And it was like, oh, you never wash clothes on a Sunday. You never do this, you never do that. But you can cook and you can, now, you know, go to a restaurant. But a lot of people, they still think that if you mop or if you wash clothes on a Sunday, you're sinning. And I said, if you look up, it says you don't even cook on that day, on the Sabbath. In the Bible, you don't even cook. You cook it before, I guess, the day before, and you have it eat. And you don't go but so many steps from where you live if you unless you're going to a house of worship. You don't do any traveling. But, you know, that's just a simple thing. But it causes, some of these things cause so much turmoil and so much problem until a lot of people, you know, just don't want anything to do with it. And I can't blame them. I used to say I'd like to start my own church and call Just As I Amers. And I would want to welcome everybody and, you know, and have a service. You know how they'll say, oh, so-and-so, they don't come to church, they send the children. And, oh, that's horrible. And then they can't get up on Sunday morning to come. And the thing is that a lot of people are night people. I'm a night person, and it's hard to do that. Why can't they have church at night or on a different day or in that?
Well, because Juanita, they're authoritarian in nature. The church is, you know, the church does not bend to your will. You bend to the church's.
Yeah.
It's all about submission.
That sort of
works as a commonality throughout the monotheistic religions. You know, it reminds me of I guess it was probably 2003, 2004, 2005, somewhere in there, when I read a story about a child in New Jersey, and she had a gluten allergy.
Uh huh.
And they were Roman Catholic, the family. And they asked the diocese if they could please have, you know, the little magic crackers.
Yeah.
If they could have their daughters made out of rice instead of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made her violently ill to take the body of Christ as constituted with gluten. And the mother church told them to get stuffed and go away. If it was good, if it's been good enough for a couple of millennia of good Roman Catholics, it ought to be good enough for their sick little sinner daughter. And they promptly became Episcopals.
Well, you know, there at one time there was this church that was arguing about the grape juice and wine for the Lord's Supper, and they couldn't agree on it, so they all decided to use Coca-Cola.
You know, we got grape juice in the Baptist church, and that's
and
you may have heard the same thing. It was explained to us that we use grape juice because drinking is evil,
Uh-huh.
And in the Bible where it says wine, that's just another word that they used for grape juice.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The wine that they had, they talk about in the New Testament, it's just grape juice. It ain't really alcohol wine.
And why did they call Jesus a wine bibber? It will drive you insane.
Well, that's because it is. That's just because it is. But you know what? I'm glad. I actually thought about you, Juanita, when all this stuff was going through my mind, because, and you've proved what I was thinking at the time. I thought, you know, Juanita's going to fit. Yeah, Juanita gets this, because you know, you really have to have traversed that lonely road toward realization that you have been had.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know,
it does not leave you without scars.
Oh no, like you said, you're a recovering Southern Baptist, and I'm a recovering something else, because these things will pop up in me. I'll get feeling guilty, you know, about different things, and you don't let it go all at once. But yeah, I'm recovering whatever I came from, you know. But these people that teach you to do certain things or obey certain people, you're going to get in trouble if you've got any problems at all. They will kill you. It either kill you or it'll destroy you. And you're a walking dead.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And, you know, look, if they could get, and see, that's the beauty of having a secular society that is set apart from the hierarchy of the church. Because in former days, you know, you could be exiled. You could be excommunicated from the church. And a person who was a member of the church in good standing was not allowed to so much as give you a crust of bread. You couldn't be buried in sanctified ground. You were doomed on earth. You were shunned.
Shunning. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
don't think for a minute that they wouldn't do that today, because they do it within their congregations. If you cross them, you're dead to them.
They talk about, what is it, the Sharia law?
Yeah, please.
I guarantee you, whoever gets in control of this country, whichever one of them, if they do, we will have some kind of Sharia law. I'm not saying it right, am I? But
well, no, the Christian Reconstructionists want exactly that. They want to bring back stoning.
Yeah, there you go. And it's, but like you say, it's okay for them, whatever, but nobody else. You got... You know, it's okay for Republicans and Tea Partiers, but not for anybody else.
Right.
Like, I don't know how you put that, but you put it really great. You know, you got the little abbreviation and all.
Yeah.
And it's true. You know, for years I thought, why is it okay for them? You know, and then you realize, yeah, that's it. Just like Stephen Baldwin, you know, taking up for Mel Brooks. I mean, not Mel Brooks.
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. But he didn't take up for Tiger Woods, I bet you. Bet you by golly. And another thing is, did you see the Emmys last night? I watched the Emmys.
No, I didn't.
That guy that's from The Office, from England, he was saying, poor Mel Gibson. Said he's been through so much. And then he said, but not as bad as the Jews have. That was so good.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Speak the truth. You too.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Good evening.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm not kidding, and Juanita bears it out. There are scars that come from having the light turn on for you when you're in the middle of a fundamentalist, or really when the light finally goes on, and you reject the frauds and the flim flammery. There's a lot of pain involved. But the knowledge, you know, not, well, what did Mark Twain said something like, be good and you'll be lonesome. Be lonesome and you'll be free. It's kind of like that. Yeah. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Aloha.
Aloha. What's up, Jim?
Oleonhe. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. You?
Well, I've just been listening, and I tried to watch part of that meeting on the mall on Saturday, and I guess what they tried to accomplish was some form of, what is it, Great Awakening?
Yeah, I think that's what he was going for. I mean, if you look at the doggerel that he opened the thing with, it was pretty clear that that's what he was going for. Let's see. I think I've got the quote right here, Jim. Glenn Beck announced at the opening of the rally, something that is beyond man is happening. America today begins to turn back to God. For too long, this country has wandered in darkness. Well, Jim, that stuff has been preached at every rally that Jerry Falwell ever attended. Billy Graham made a career out of it. Billy Sunday made it, you know. They've been preaching that America has turned from God for as long as there's been an America.
Well, Bob, I think the years of darkness, really, I think one of the darkest periods in our history has been during the past 8 years, or the past 8 years plus minus two, when George Bush was in office.
Oh, without a doubt.
And this country attempted to do a number of things which they should not have done. A great deal of great errors have been made for which we are paying in terms of blood, treasure, our own reputation amongst the nations of the world. And basically, this was done by the followers of some of the people that you saw assembled on the National Mall. I mean, did you look at that crowd up there on the mall?
Yes, I did. Man, was it white.
Well, not only was it white, but, I mean, I could look at the expressions of the people there, and they were just, I don't know, they were almost faceless, expressionless. And I could see no light coming through their eyes. I could see no type of compassion or any type of divination or whatever. And I don't know, what do you think what are the political outcomes of that particular meeting on the mall on Saturday? What do you think they are?
Well, like I said, I think the first beneficiary, the prime beneficiary, is Willard Romney.
Okay.
If he capitalizes on it.
Right.
Because the whole thing was designed to say, hey, look, you know, Beck's a Mormon. And, you know, he scattered, Juanita was right, he scattered some Mormon code through there. But I'm not as good at Mormon code as I am at fundamentalist code. But it was an attempt to draw fundamentalists and evangelicals all together under one big tent and get them to march as a monolith. Now, see, if you're using the code, Jim, you don't have to say things overtly. You don't have to get up and say Obama is a Muslim. You just get up there and talk about turning away from the darkness.
Well, these people are masters of underspeak, and they're masters of subtlety, and they are attempting to appeal to a very ad hominem portion of the human psyche.
They are, as usual, appealing to the basest and most awful segments of human nature, Jim. But, you know, you said that they are masters of underspeak and that they have incredible subtlety. And again, this is just a product of having been brought up in all this stuff. Who does the Bible describe as being that way as well, Jim?
Bob, you're more adept at this sort of thing than I am, because a lot of this type of stuff...
Well, Satan is a master of subtlety.
Well, of course he is. He's definitely. I mean, obviously, he's going to use all types of means. And as Juanita said, there will be many people fooled by these false prophets and people who speak in God's name, but they do so for ulterior motives and the exact reason, and they are the antithesis of any form of devout and true Christianity, in my opinion.
You want to get a sense for who was attending this conclave or this clavern on Saturday, Jim? Listen to this. This is a quote from the New York Times story. Becky Benson, 56, traveled from Orlando, Florida, because, she said, quote, we believe in Jesus Christ, and Jesus, she said, would not have agreed with the economic stimulus package, bank bailouts, and welfare. You cannot sit and expect someone to hand out to you. You don't spend your way out of debt. Good God, where is trickle-down economics in Matthew, Mark, or Luke? Please.
It's not there. Laffer is not there. Supply side was never preached by Christ, Bob. Never. And that's what these people, that's what their fundamental economic belief is. It's supply-side economics that the rich will allow us to devour crumbs that fall from their table.
That, you know, you said that they would have sat and listened to the Sermon on the Mount and never heard a word.
Oh, they'd have been sound asleep.
They certainly missed that the poor shall inherit the earth part, didn't they?
Yeah, they certainly did. They certainly did. And, you know, these things frighten me because, I mean, I've seen so many historical rallies of this type that had these false force and fault multipliers that keep them going.
Absolutely. And the way that they have insinuated these BS talking points into people who have no conceptualization of what they're saying. In the New York Times story, again, Ron Sears, age 65, of Corbin, Kentucky, is quoted, and he says, the federal government is only to offer us protection from our enemies and help us when we need it. What's help us when we need it? Jim, what was he doing there? What does he think that unemployment insurance is? What does he think that the women and infant children funding is? What does he think that food stamps are? What does he think Social Security SSI is? I'm not talking about the pension Social Security. It's help when we need it. But the thing is, he deems anybody but himself. And again, this is all code. Help when we need it means help when I need it.
Right. And, you know, I don't think there's an ounce of compassion in many of these people. And I know there's no ounce of compassion in people like Beck or Sarah Palin or people like that. I really don't think so. I mean, they are opportunists. They're taking advantage of the situation to advance their own political careers and to establish some type of theocratic hegemony at the expense of other people in direct contravention to the Constitution upon which this country was established.
Hear, hear.
I'll tell you a joke if you want to hear it.
Okay.
And I don't mean to be sacrilegious to anyone. I don't mean any offense to this, but I've heard this joke all my life. But there was a church that had this come as your favorite hymn party. Have you heard this one?
No. I'm oh, but I know your jokes, and I can't wait.
Well, this church had a come as your favorite hymn party, and the pastor or whomever, the Lord High Holy God, that particular section of whatever they believed in, his function was to judge the costumes. And at first he came to Sister Olga, who had a string of light bulbs around her waist, and he said, Sister Olga, how clever. It must be, let the lower lights be burning. And then he went to Brother John, Sister Mary. Well, she came in all together. And he said, well, Sister Mary, that's a bit shocking, but could this be just as I am? And then he went to Brother John, who had this thing of wheat tied around his waist. And he said, Brother John, how clever. Bishop is bringing in the sheaves. He said, well, I don't know, Parson, but if Sister Mary don't put on her clothes, it's going to be coming through the rye.
Oh.
I should not have told that.
Jim will be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your server.
Anyway. But, you know, I just, where have I been? All this sort of thing has just been, you said you've led a sheltered life. I must have led one, too. But I haven't. But I've never encountered this type of chicanery.
Well, it's been there all along, Jim. But the thing is, what it boils down to is that the stuff that the right wing, these purveyors, these merchants of hate, the thing that they've done is that in former generations, there were things that they could talk about only behind closed doors and only among their own. You know. And then it got to where they could speak about it in their John Birch Society meetings and their Klan rallies.
Right. You know, I've seen this picture from Nazi Germany. They have a picture of Hitler speaking, and beneath that picture was, in the beginning was the word. And I guess some of these people are following people like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin the same way they followed that idiot.
Yeah, and there's an existential inquiry that has to be made as to why. Why are they so willing to follow someone like this? And just as Jesus said, the poor ye have always with ye.
Exactly.
You know, he didn't say poor how. Now, that verse occurs when Judas is saying, hey, because that's when he's getting his hair washed with some woman's, or his feet washed with some woman's hair, right?
Right. She had purchased some oil to do it.
And it's ascribed to Judas, although I'm not sure that it really was. But somebody says, you know, hey, Rabbi, we could sell this, take the money, and give it to the poor. And Jesus looks up, and Kurt Vonnegut says it's an example of Jesus making a joke. But that's beside the point. Jesus looks up and says, you know, the poor ye have always with you. I'm not going to always be here. And it's a very human moment. But the thing that I always thought about was, we assume it's the monetarily poor. But that statement, the poor ye have always with you, that's not just a statement on pecuniary poverty.
Oh, no, you're talking about intellectual poverty, you're talking about spiritual poverty, you're talking about a poverty of compassion, a poverty of humanity.
Right, and by way of sort of expanding on your query, we have in this country a vast number of people whose poverty of spirit, whose poverty of compassion, whose poverty of mercy, whose poverty of love,
precisely,
is almost incalculable.
Poverty of civility. Poverty.
And those people will flock and gravitate to the likes of a Glenn Beck.
Just a complete poverty of total virtue, period.
A poverty of humanity, Jim.
Exactly. It's exactly what I said. You know, a poverty of humanity. And lack of, and people who have no compassion, their eyes are dead, their minds are blocked, and they are simply, I really don't know what to describe them as being.
Well, think about Edward Arlington Robinson's poem, Richard Cory.
Oh, yeah.
It says, and we cursed our bread. But Richard Cory went home one night and put a bullet in his head.
Exactly.
And he was rich beyond measure.
Right.
Well, you know, there's some that Paul McCartney turned it into a magnificent song, called, oddly enough, Richard Cory. But also, we have living examples of it. Let's say for a moment, Jim, that, and I mean no insult by this, that you're Rush Limbaugh. For several years, you have lived in a 26,000-square-foot mansion with nothing but a cat. You're making $40,000 or $40 million, $50 million a year. And the only thing you can think of to do with that money is to take a big enough handful of OxyContin to just make the world go away? God almighty, with $50 million a year, how could you be bored? But it's because he suffers. It's because he is one of those poor that we have always with us. You know, that verse is not an indictment of people who are pecuniarily poor. It's a victim. It's an indictment of a society that creates people who are morally, ethically, and spiritually bankrupt. And there sits, and if he wasn't such a hate-filled, miserable bastard, I could feel some sympathy for him. But he is, and I don't. And so he's, but you know, you can extend it across line after line after line. You know, people want to give Tiger Woods hell for all of his sexual flings. Well, you know what? What's left when you've got that much money? What's left to make your adrenaline gland do what adrenal glands are supposed to do and create a little excitement, except maybe sexual conquest? For others, you know, it was said that Michael Jordan would go on gambling sprees and lose, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on a single roll of the dice or a single turn of the card. Because when you have nothing underneath you to sort of bear up existentially, there's that word again, mm-hmm. All the money in the world isn't going to make you any better.
No, it's not.
You know, it was said that when Alexander had to turn back, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer.
Yeah, he had lost his reasons for being, his raison d'etre.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say about what I heard there on the TV on Saturday is tinkling brasses and sounding cymbals.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sarah Palin, how much do they pay that woman? I think her
I don't think she paints her nails for less than $100,000.
Well, I heard today that basically the minimum is $75,000 for her to even, you know, come near where you are. And then she's got this huge contract in which she cannot have any straws that don't have a bend in them and things of that nature. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yep, take out all the brown M&Ms.
Exactly, and, you know, wardrobe fees, stuff like that. I mean, these people have a hustle going, the likes of which, the only thing I can say to end this conversation is, what they lacked up there on the mall was a huge sign that says, see the egress.
This way.
Good night, sir.
Jim, you take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. This way to the egress. P.T. Barnum would have been damn proud. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, I'm so glad you watched it because I couldn't really bear it. You know what I mean?
Well, every now and then I try to go out and take one for the team.
Yeah, no, I figured as much. But, you know, I did sort of read various things, but I think that your observation is pretty on with the Mormon business, especially the connection to Romney. That asset stripper comes out real well if your analysis is right, and that's frightening because he, you know.
Yeah, you broke up a little bit, but oh. I get your meaning.
He's coherent, unlike Beck.
Exactly.
But I just, you know, I saw some pictures and more darkies on stage than in the crowds, huh?
Oh, yeah, like I said, since the road company routes went through Birmingham.
Or President Bush's 2004.
That was the other thing. When I started seeing that parade of black folk on the stage, I thought, Jesus Christ, I bet this is the same gang they had for 2004 and Bush.
Exactly. I mean, that was like the go-to event for that little phenomena. I'd never get over that. I'm like,
see, now Sandra, I don't have the cultural background or the stripes or whatever to say it, but is Alveda King simply sickening?
No. It's mind-numbing, you know.
And that I forget who it was that criticized her. Somebody criticized her because, you know, she's out there talking about one man, one woman, you know, sanctity of marriage, yada, 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 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Yeah.
And somebody said, you know, Coretta Scott King said that Dr. King would have endorsed marriage equality. You know what her answer was?
Yeah, she said she's the one with the DNA.
Well,
yeah.
I have his DNA, and she didn't.
Yeah, no. She's a piece of work, that one. And she's getting a lot of heat. That's why she's freaking out. You know, a lot of people are coming down on her. It's like, you know, dude, what the hell? You know what I mean?
But you know what? She's got a great hustle, and I have a feeling it pays nicely.
I'm sure it does, especially when she can step up for all the horrible monsters that are behind her. You know what I mean? They don't want to show their face, you know? They just have put her out there. I mean, it's just tried and true throughout history. But, you know, the whole thing about what Jim was talking about, like a sort of dead lifelessness of the people who follow this crap, I just tie it to what Christopher, what is his name?
Hitchens?
No, not Hitchens. The guy who, Hedges.
Hedges, yeah.
What he always talks about with the white religious right is that they can't figure out what's happening to them, you know, by the powers that be. So, you know, they turn to this sort of fundamentalism, be it Beck or whoever. I mean, the scary thing about him is how, what a huge stage he has, you know.
Oh, I mean,
that's the thing that's different from the usual run-of-the-mill right, even more so than Farwell or these other freaks. This Beck person is that's off the charts for the backing and the platform. That's what bugs me the most about him.
Well, and in a way, he's the perfect storm because, you know, after years of listening to Limbaugh, Limbaugh won't go out there and get religious very often.
And he won't
get explicitly religious about anything as to what his faith is or isn't, because at the end of the day, his faith is in the bottom line of his bank account.
Right. I mean, it's all about his faith is just greed. That's literally.
And
that's,
you know, I remember all those years that he used to just mercilessly ride the American Civil Liberties Union, and then of course the ACLU saved his ass from prison, and now he doesn't say anything good about him. He just doesn't say anything about them.
Yeah, no. You know, I mean, his stick is well old and tried, and anybody with any sense is aware of it. But this character here, this Beck, is, you know, it's a whole different thing going on. But, you know, I do think that it is a perfect storm in the sense of this more than usual economic insecurity and that whites are now feeling it pretty pronounced has to factor in, because this insecurity has always been around for a lot of us, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So, it's just sort of, you have a huge chunk of this country that has been decoupled, and ain't nobody reaching out to ever bring them back. So, that takes on a life of its own in America, because I just wonder where it's all going to end, because that economic insecurity has to have a valve. There's no more homesteading. I don't know what you plan on doing. And most times in America, you have things that can release that valve, that pressure. I don't see it, Bob. Do you?
No, there's not. There is absolutely not. And that may be the trenchant line. That may be the toaster line of the night. There's no more homesteading. You know, you can't, if it ain't working for you in the Dust Bowl, you can't pick up and eat Grapes of Wrath and head for California.
No, and there ain't no, and the brown people they're trying to step on is already in the ground they stepped on. You understand what I'm saying? That's why I'm always amazed by that. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, you got more people going back to Mexico than coming here. Hello.
And, you know, that may be the only homestead left. There's a little bit of funny irony in that. But, you know, let me ask this, though. Given the fact that there was a counter-protest over at Dunbar High School across town to sort of celebrate the anniversary of the King's speech, do you think that any of that that BS on that stage resonated with any part of the black community?
Well, I can sort of confidently say no. I'm sorry. I just, you know, how in the world could it?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm speaking away from my own expertise. You know, he made an overt effort to have lots of dark-skinned folks up on that stage, and he let them sing and dance, and he ran a Martin Luther King video. And
well, no, listen.
I mean, from my perspective, it looked like pretty shameless lip service.
No, but, you know, I mean, I don't know the whole quote, but Malcolm X always, you know, the way he talked about it's raining, oh, we sick. Okay, you remember that whole quote when he's talking about when a black person identifies with whitey?
Yeah.
We sick. We need to pick this. That is as far as I can go with what's going on. Or we're getting paid, so I don't care about the black community at all. I'm getting paid. This is what I'm doing.
Well, you know, just from my understanding and my visual viewing of the thing, I kept my eyes peeled just looking for black folks in the crowd. And you know what? You could count up on one hand and be done and leave the mitten on the other one.
No, I mean, there's no way. I'm sorry. I mean, you have conservative black folks. I mean, but that would be Bill Cosby and Barack Obama, you know? And that mindset isn't going to be associated with something that Glenn Beck is doing. You know what I'm saying?
But doesn't that line about for too long this country has wandered in darkness just blow your doors off? America today begins to turn back to God. For too long this country has wandered in darkness. Now, is there anybody in that crowd, Sandra, who did not understand that what that meant was since January 20th, 2009, we have wandered in darkness?
Well, no, but the whole thing is like, the whole message of that to me was like, we got to get that nigga out of the White House. Sorry.
No,
that's the whole, you know what I mean? Let's be honest. There's always that with this whole situation, which elevates it, you know, exponentially. The hysteria of these white people is always stoked.
And, you know, I'm one of those, Sandra, who believes in that notion that there is music in the empty spaces between the notes. Or maybe dog whistle or whatever. But the fact that there was not one mention of Muslims, of Islam, and Obama's name was not spoken, you know, don't think that silence wasn't noticed. I know that may sound a little crazy on my part, but it was what he didn't say as much as what was said, because a lot of what was said was just psychobabble.
Yeah, I think, you know, you hit it on the head with the different dog whistles and how, of course, most of the liberals, you know, it would be over their head. And I mean, I agree with you. I think that, you know, he's definitely playing to a certain effect, and the sort of normalization of Mormonism, that's brilliant, you know, especially since it's such a creepy sort of religion that was forged when there was a lot of economic insecurities. Let's be honest. If you look at America, anytime you got some hiccup, like the Great Awakening or whatever, or the second one,
there's some ugly economics riding along underneath
it. Right. Now, I'm a big fan of the Great Awakenings. I think it's very interesting to read and to look upon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's in direct conflict with the Enlightenment. You know, it's very American. It's interesting. But please, can we not have this bitch talking about he's leading a third one? Come on. I was really insulted by reading about that comment. I'm like, dude, you ain't that important yet. You know what I'm saying?
No, and see, that's one of those things that I did notice, Sandra, was, for instance, I saw it was a wonderful post over at Daily Kos about it was a something like, you know, a report from a black liberal who went to this thing. And it was brilliant, but at the bottom, he had a little poll that he had inserted. Why did Beck do this? And the one that won out was to make Beck richer.
Okay, well, that tells you, that's...
But it wasn't. We don't, and that was the part that kind of bummed me out, was that was the leading explanation by, you know, the so-called liberal readers of Daily Kos. That it was to get richer, but the fact of the matter was, the thing cost X number of million dollars to put on, and that was paid for out of monies donated to the Special Operations Warrior Fund, and then whatever was left over, Special Operations Warrior Fund got money, and basically Beck came away with not a cent, I don't think, but he doesn't need it. You know, the guy makes millions of dollars every year, so that can't have been the motive.
No, but that goes into what you say oftentimes about the sort of tenureness of liberals, too, you know, whereas you can identify the dog whistles and the religious aspects of a lot of these sort of events, and, you know, you give that kind of analysis, which, like you said, makes you unique. The Daily Kos will come out with something like that. I mean, you know, I'm not surprised by that, but I think you're right. I mean, him and these other sort of rich F's, you know, the money is nothing. Now they're just playing, you know?
Power.
They're playing. They're playing with folks because they can.
Right. Now it's to see what they can get away with.
Right. No.
I don't see a hell of a lot of difference between a Glenn Beck and a Pablo Escobar.
Well, I mean, no, it is that crazy. I think so. But the thing is that's worrying is, like, the people who are being, you know, who are flocking to this, you know, that's the worry.
Right, and that's my whole point. When, you know, when they are out in the streets and they are gunning people down, and it has turned into that video, that Left Behind video game, Sandra, that, you know, that dumb bastard's going to be sitting on his 100 acres up in Connecticut laughing his ass off and getting behind the microphone and saying, Jesus wants you to do it, hallelujah, bring America back to religion, and there's going to be, you know, and somebody's going to go bust a cap in somebody else.
Radio Rwanda.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Really,
you know, it's the last scene from Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
Now run.
No, I mean, but in the meantime, though, I just have to tell you this: Standard and Poor's, that those horrible, pernicious rating agencies, they've said that you know, the U.S. must address the deficit, basically saying the measures taken in response to recommendations by his commission on fiscal responsibility would be crucial in the SP take on the U.S. credit rating. So this is like blackmail. They're saying that you need to do something about this.
In other words, we're getting the treatment that the World Monetary Fund used to drop on places like Ecuador.
And they just lowered Irish credit to AA after over 3 years of this austerity that they were told to do, which Ireland did, but yet and still, the other day, they downgraded their debt anyway. You see what I'm saying? But this thing in the fall is turning into something that we all need to be aware of. I mean, I can't stress it. I keep reading bits and pieces like this, and I'm like, damn. You know, these are privately owned corporations telling the U.S. government they need to destroy the rest of the safety net, or else? This is straight up fascism. I'm sorry. I'm done. I can't sugarcoat it anymore. And we need to be aware of this lame duck Congress that's going to be happening when this bitch is going to release the so-called findings from the Cat Food Commission, because that just freaked me out, the sort of rating agencies. And I don't mean to take up loads of your time on this.
No, you're not. No, for me, it all ties together, Sandra. Because like you said, anytime you get a great awakening, there's some economic tectonic activity taking place underneath it. You know, the great awakening happened economic rumble, you know, because all of that shit was going on with the debate over the Bank of the United States, and Andrew Jackson and yada, 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 and the westward expansion and basically, you know, a genocide taking place with the native peoples.
Are you talking about the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and in combination with the really American idea that, no, we don't have to answer to the higher-ups, there is that element, which is what I find most interesting about the Great Awakenings. It's also a response to authority in a really good American tradition.
But what's going to happen when the hot checks get called? You know, is it just going to be more rallies for more rubes as the rubes' lives continue to devolve?
Well, see, this is that's a worry because, like I always say, people aren't going to just starve in some corner and just die. You see what I mean? That's not going to happen. I mean, I don't really know, but there's another thing that I noticed, too, of this sort of refinancing fair. They're expecting 20,000 people in Florida over the next few days.
Oh, Jesus, and they're not even set up to deal with that.
Well, I'm just saying, so we have yet another expression of mass desperation about housing on display. Is this going to be happening every couple of weeks now? You see what I mean? There's some, you know, this stuff is...
But at some point, and I hate to use phrases like tipping point and stuff, but at some point, ultimately... you know, money that's electronic, money that isn't real, money that's not tied to some sort of standard, whether it be cacao beans or gold or silver or whatever, at some point in time, it becomes even a burden on the people who have the most of it, even though it's not real. You know, how many empty homes can the great big mortgage lenders of America have on their books for how long, Sandra?
Oh, no, it's incredible what's going on. And this whole, that's why I keep getting really freaked out by this sort of quantitative easing, too, that's coming up, because it don't make no sense except to allow for more acquisitions and mergers, you see, because that money is not trickling down to productive means. And, in fact, Obama was out today begging the Congress to deal with this small business bill. You know that?
Yeah.
In Congress, and guess what the response from people are? Oh, no, that's like a mini TARP. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now it's the bailout. Now it's the problem. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Wait a minute. This is productive means we're trying to address. Yet the pushback and the resistance to any sort of bailout, if you want to call it, or help, to where jobs are created, because back to microeconomics 101, 75% of jobs are created by small business in this country, if I may throw that statistic out.
You do, and you do so accurately.
And it's just sort of like you're telling me that, you know, we're having quibbles about $30 billion spent for that function to community banks that may actually lend money to these small businesses, which we always cherish and worship, right?
Exactly.
It's incredible. Anyway, I don't know. I don't even have any...
I love the frustration that Obama sort of manifested in his little Brian Williams conversation.
Now, which one is this? What was he talking about? Because I think,
Well, he sat down with Brian Williams, and Brian Williams asked him about the growth of the birther movement. And Obama looked at him and he said, and this is the quote, "There is a mechanism, a network of misinformation that in a new media era can get churned out there constantly. I can't spend all of my time with my birth certificate plastered on my forehead."
Okay, well, you can just replace that comment with Ms. Hillary Clinton.
Vast right-wing conspiracy. It's the same one. And they're both correct.
Yeah, but what's really disturbing, though, is if they lose one of them houses, he's going to be really frustrated.
I was thinking about that earlier today, because the promise has been made that if they get control of the house, what did Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman say? It's going to be nonstop investigations.
Right. Which,
And do you notice how that's just taken as okay in the press? But when Democrats even make a boo about any kind of Republican misdoings, they're told.
Oh, I know. I thought about it, and the thing that scared me was, I wonder if Barack Obama has the savvy that Bill Clinton had for dealing with them when they're doing that.
Well, obviously, no. That's the big worry because, you know, it's so timid. I fear for the dude because they don't seem to operate. They're operating in a bubble, him and his people, constantly. And I think that, you know, they seem to think they'll be able to reason, probably. I really don't know. But it's going to be two years of stagnation.
Well, did you see what Krugman said about it today?
That was off. I was like, damn, he put his political hat on today. Obviously, that dude is coming undone.
Well, you know, and he said the same thing that I was worrying about earlier, that, you know, I was worrying about it in personal terms. Does Barack Obama have the stones to deal with it like Clinton did? But the Krugman being smarter and, you know, deeper than me, he asked, actually, he said, you know, that happened, the Lewinsky thing and all of that impeachment crap happened during a time of great peace and great prosperity.
Yeah.
When a little bit of gridlock and a little bit of breakdown and a little bit of show of brinksmanship, you know, the country could weather it.
Right.
But we can't weather that now.
No, that's the thing. It's like, you know, we can't afford, we can't afford dumbass Republicans who is this one Tea Party guy who wants to lock up poor people now so they can learn how to do hygiene?
Yep.
Okay, this is what's coming down the pike. So you know what, I don't know where I was reading, but the person made a good point about the ungovernability that's happening around the world. It's not just here. Australia has a hung parliament. England, and what the person was suggesting, and it's coming to America, is people look at Obama, they're like, oh, my God, what's going on? But then they look at what's coming, and they're like, ah, you see? And this is where we're at. And I totally agree, because usually divided government in the U.S. is a common occurrence, you know, presidency, house, whatever, right?
Right.
That's kind of like, because the population sort of thinks, oh, they're suspicious, so they think that it works better when it's just gridlock. Because God help us if the government actually enacts different things, right? That's the thing.
And that's that's another thing that the American people have been taught to believe. When in point of fact, we've gotten the greatest amount done when, for instance, with FDR's Congresses, when he had somebody he could work with.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, but I'm just telling you what the usual, the sort of conventional wisdom is. But we can't afford that now, though.
No, if that happens now,
I'm saying it's a really frightening prospect, because the specter of Boehner or Mitch Machin, please. I mean, I'm not a fan of Harry Reid, but I just don't want the sort of just bare-ass fascism that those other two men represent, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it is, so it is a bit of a worry, but I don't know. I just think that it's quite interesting that, yes, the Tea Party may be making gains in the primary process, but, you know, I don't know, come general election, if people are going to look and think, oh, no, you know?
And, of course, the other thing to bear in mind is that they don't think in terms of they don't think of politics, the right wing and so forth, in monolithic terms. They don't just want one thing. They want it all. They want it all every time. And Matt Osborne pointed out today on his blog by an anecdote from down in Alabama that the Republican Party is very, very good, Sandra, at looking down ballot and understanding how much power they can wield by being down ballot.
Well,
you know, aldermen, the state house reps, you know, that kind of stuff.
I don't know, but the thing is, I just have one question about the Congress again. The thing that's really disturbing, though, is you know, I live in fear of, say, the House goes Republican, whatever, and they manage to get an extension of the Bush tax cut, and they put it on the desk of Obama. Now, when Clinton was in office, we could pretty much be rest assured that he would just veto it, right? But I can't say I'm that confident.
Well, what happened? Okay, Obama. and there's the question.
You know,
what happened? First, has Barack Obama vetoed much of anything? I don't remember.
I think he has. I don't know if he's done one. Either one or none. But what I mean is that would be an obvious veto to most of us.
But, yeah, but that's the question. What happens? What happens if this Congress turns Republican in January 2011, and they decide to take the Cat Food Commission seriously and pass legislation and send it to Barack Obama's desk?
Well, but you need to look, yeah. I mean, the lame duck is when all, because we know that Pelosi already said that the Congress is prepared to, you know, vote on it or do something with it. So, you know, after the election is a really crucial time. But I wonder if he would even have enough stones to veto the Bush tax cut.
That's what I'm asking.
That's what I'm saying. I have no idea.
And it's as usual, it is the lack of knowledge that proves most terrifying.
Well, you know, I'm not sort of, at this point, I'm just really starting to worry about the rest of the safety net, what's left of it.
And for good reason. But I did mention something, Sandra, and I'll let you go. But there's a story out there that has just had me in stitches. Did you read the story about this education commissioner in New Jersey?
Well, now which one's this?
Okay, he was the education commissioner in New Jersey, and New Jersey lost a $400 million Race to the Top grant because of errors made in the application process that this guy was responsible for. His name is Schundler, Brett Schundler. And Schundler wrote a letter to Republican Governor Chris Christie. They're both Republicans. They're both fiscal conservatives. And, you know, they don't believe in welfare. But Chris Schundler wrote a letter to Chris Christie, or Brett Schundler wrote a letter to Chris Christie, specifically asking Governor Christie to fire him instead of accepting his resignation. You know why?
Why?
Because Brett Schundler wanted to be able to collect unemployment. Doesn't that just make you want to eat grass and run rabbits?
Oh, my God. Well, I guess they had, actually, speaking of that, they had all the sort of states that got it and the ones that didn't. And, of course, apparently, the ones that didn't, they're, like, you know, ramping up their anti-union rhetoric on it.
Oh, yeah, but I just wonder if Brett Schundler needs to be sent to a prison camp where he can learn to brush his teeth.
Well, there is that. Yeah, I mean, how dare he try to tap into that? You know, it doesn't surprise me. Not at all. Anyway.
You know, hypocrisy, thy name is Republican, but we know that, right?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, wow. I didn't even know how to approach that, but, I mean, it's pretty typical that, you know, they don't want big government when it's helping other folks. That's
right, exactly. It's like that guy from the New York Times article. Government's supposed to protect us from foreign enemies and help us when we need it. And by us, I mean me.
Right.
And so, you know, unemployment is a welfare program until the Brett Schundlers of the world need to be fired instead of resigning. Because, you know, if he'd resigned, he wouldn't have gotten it. That's called a voluntary quit, and that'll wipe you out of any unemployment anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, the bifurcation process is in full effect in this country, too. I just think I keep going back to this whole idea that they're getting us set up to be okay with double-digit unemployment, you know, for the next 20 years, I swear to God.
And, you know,
Bob?
No, I was going to say, you know, we were asking about, we were talking about the nightmare scenarios. Check this one out, and then you can exit screaming, Sandra.
Okay.
David in Tennessee just sent this to me. He said, I finally figured it out. President Obama has it as his operating system. If we Democrats only become the Republicans, the nation will never need to elect the Republicans. And so, as such, if the Republicans take over in the House and Senate, they'll just attach the permanence of the Bush tax cuts to an Afghan war funding bill, and then the tax cut will be made permanent right then and there, game over.
Yeah, listen, sounds like the plan. Can't argue with that.
It makes perfectly twisted, dysfunctional sense.
Oh, yeah, no, that I would not be surprised. Anyway, have a good evening.
All right, take care, Sandra. Bye now. 15 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. We are well into the third hour of the program, and we will move forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
I was summoned.
You were. I conjured you.
Yes. Let me start off by saying this. You know somewhere Stephen Baldwin is mad and saying, that's my name! Restore Stephen, but he stole it!
Oh, my God, I didn't even think about that.
And then the other thing, and then everything else I promise is not last. It's serious. And the other thing is, I was so surprised, Bob, that I didn't see any inflatable chairs in the reflection pool listening to Jody Messina on their waterproof radios.
You know what I wanted more than anything else?
Yeah, what's that?
I wanted somebody to run into the reflecting pool screaming, Forrest!
You know what? I was hoping for a Chauncey Gardner moment where he was walking on the reflection pool.
I have a message for you.
Yeah.
From, what was his name?
Oh.
I have a message from, Chauncey, okay.
Yeah,
there's our obscure film reference for the night.
The last great, the last moment of Peter's, I won't say the last movie I never saw but that he did was, he played an Asian guy.
Oh, the
Wu thing or whatever.
The nefarious plot of Dr. Fu Manchu?
Yeah, that.
Yeah, that's a tough watch, but it's brilliant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but no, being there, yeah, I like to watch.
So.
And ultimately, it wasn't George W. Bush, our Chauncey Gardner, only evil?
You know what? I mean, a lot of people saw that, and I agree with you. I've heard that commentary before, And this rally that happened this weekend, I saw how everyone was basically, Bob, they took it as a joke again. And see, that's the problem.
Well, that's what I mentioned earlier. It was not a joke. I mean, yeah, right. There was stuff to laugh at, but it was not a joke.
No, it wasn't a joke. And here's the thing about it. You're so right about the whole, the not mentioning a Muslim thing. That is key. That is one of the crucial keys. And when you see these, mosques continue to be burned up in flames, don't be surprised. And don't be surprised, and here's also the other thing, and I said this before, but the right wing is going to embrace the multicultural rainbow and leave one out. Be inclusive to a lot of other groups, but uninclusive to another one, gays and Muslims.
Sure, there wasn't a blessed word about gay marriage.
Right.
You know, when Beck said, you know, well, we're going to honor Dr. King. Well, there wasn't a bit about the stuff the social justice that mattered to Dr. King, because Dr. King was into social justice, and Beck has already told us that that's communism.
And here's the interesting thing about this: nobody is really catching on to this, but they should be. And I don't know if Sandra's checked out the clip yet, but apparently, Joe Madison, the Black Eagle in D.C. got to interview Glenn Beck.
Oh, yeah, and that was a beautiful piece of twisted backup doublespeak. Well, I didn't mean that I thought he was a racist who hated white people. Now I understand it's how he grew up. This is Beck talking. It's a function of how he was raised. He's a follower of liberation theology. And, of course, Pope Benedict has already told us that that's Antichrist stuff.
But you know, one of the great points that Madison made, which he also followed up on the Tom Hartman show today, was the fact that he said Glenn Beck was he was talking about how that Martin Luther King was for social justice, and he said to him, he said, didn't you know that, Glenn? And he's like, I've never heard of that before. I'll ask Avita. But here's the interesting thing about it. This is the behind the scenes that Joe Madison gave to us on the Tom Hartman show. Afterwards, the group, the party, they were so shook up, Bob, that they had a huddle. and they said what Joe Madison just said. Should we mention this on the radio show today? Should we mention this? And what Beck's people didn't know, because we're dealing with Mora and Monday, but what Beck's people didn't know is that one person in the huddle was one of Joe Madison's people. So he was listening in on their actual play-by-play. And what they decided to do was, when he went live, he didn't mention Joe Madison's name. He said, I ran into some guy I didn't know, and he said he hated me. He does. See, this is the problem that a lot of people, they don't pick up on this. The fact that, liberals need to understand this. Saturday, which should have been the celebration of Martin Luther King, the blog fest was talking about how loony Beck was. The one with the bigger megaphone wins. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but I was in a Ustream. I was in a Ustream page that had 100,000 people viewing that piece of shit.
And then Jesus criminy.
I said, oh, my God. This is so diabolical. It's so insane. But on the other side of the thing that I found really, really interesting, almost in an ironic way, was on that day, 50 Cent was tweeting just controversial statement after controversial statement. So I was watching the two things contrast at my computer. I was listening to the rally, and at the same time, I was looking at what 50 Cent was saying next. And here's the interesting thing. Because he was saying all this crazy stuff, because Beck was saying all this crazy stuff, I noticed a parallel. They both have this high volume of interest in whatever they do. But when 50 Cent started going crazy on Twitter, and on Saturday, of all things, during the Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream, which is in question, could be I Have a Scheme now, since Glenn Beck has entered this scene, we're going to have to do something about that, Bob. But the interesting thing about it was, as I said, when last time we talked, his Twitter followers were at 2 million, 2.5. Now they're at 3 million. The number one person on Twitter is Britney Spears, and she has 5 million. But see, here's the thing. The thing that I'm getting at is, what I want people to understand is that these two particular pop icons now, pop cultural icons, understand the game. Liberals don't. Or the liberal icons and the mascots, they don't understand the game yet. The game is...
Well, see, that, and that, I'm not trying to interrupt you, but I just did. That's the point, David.
Yeah.
They don't, you do, we do, and therefore it is up to us to, and I don't know how we're going to do it. You know, we can barely keep this thing on the air, but it's up to us to build that mechanism.
Let me bring an interesting point about how we live basically in a distractocracy now.
Ooh, good word.
It's just constant distraction after distraction. And, you know, when I see, here's the thing about it. When I see people play gotcha games with the latest conservative mascot or the latest conservative, it's fun. But when you have your whole blog focused on that, and when you have your whole writing focused on that, to me, you're totally missing the point. Because here's the point I think liberals should know. And I heard this on the Peter Werby show. And you'll find this interesting, Bob. The Martin Luther King rallies that they had in 1993 in Detroit were 100,000. The Martin Luther King rallies that they had in 2010 were 5,000. As I've said before, people, do the math. And you know why that is? Part of it's the economy. But also, Bob, part of it is because the funding has been cut so much, all of these community organizers and leaders have left these marches. They've left and moved on to bigger and brighter things, and they don't have replacements. Instead of focusing on Glenn Beck, and instead of focusing on all of these mascots and pundits that the mainstream, you know, Bob, the other thing that really pissed me off was the fact that our mainstream media went so willingly with everything and didn't give any kind of crucial critical thinking at the end. Like, why are we putting this crap on the air when this is dangerous shit? They never did that. You know,
the New York Times story about it was just a little love letter. Like I said, part of the reason that I sat and watched that foolishness was because I wanted to make my to reach my own conclusions about it,
right.
and not have whatever the for-profit media said about it be the last word. I mean, listen to this. I mean, this is fanboy blog writing. Okay, this is Kate Zernicki and Carl Hulse and Brian Knowlton in the in the New York Times. An enormous and impassioned crowd rallied at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial this weekend. Enormous? 87,000 is enormous? Summoned. Okay, you use a word like summoned for either official governmental judicial business or else the magicians. Summoned by Glenn Beck, a conservative broadcaster, conservative my ass, who called for a religious rebirth in America at the site where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech exactly 47 years earlier. And then they go to a quote from Beck. Something that is beyond man is happening, Beck told the crowd in what was part religious revival and part history lecture. America today begins to turn back to God. No, David, it was not part history lecture. There was no history in it. Daggummit. There was no history in it. There was mythologized, phony baloney pseudo psychobabble history, but there was no history. I mean, yes, he mentioned Abraham Lincoln. Yes, there really was an Abraham Lincoln. Yes, he mentioned George Washington. Yes, there really was a George Washington. Yes, he mentioned Martin Luther King. Yes, there really was a Martin Luther King. But that's as far as history goes.
You know the thing about it, and when people ask why would the New York Times do this, and I'm sure you're all aware, I'm sure you're well aware of this, Bob, is because they believe that they can get some of the good side of the right, so less of the scorn, so they're not called a liberal rag nine times, just all across the airwaves, and this is what the New York Times doesn't get. You will permanently be the scapegoat, just as CNN will be seen as communist news network. It doesn't matter what you do.
No.
And that's the problem, Bob. They don't get it. They don't understand that our media, these media are meant to be wrestling opponents. They're the villains.
Well, why do you think I keep saying that, like, in the battle of fundamentalist versus fundamentalist, it's all tastes great versus less filling? You know, maybe since you're a little bit younger than me, you don't get what that means. But, you know, there was an entire series of utterly meaningless yet highly popular Miller Lite commercials that were great debates between tastes great and less filling. At the end of the commercial, it's still one great beer, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was utterly
without content.
Well, that's what this is. The thing that I keep getting at, and I was looking at it and I was witnessing, and I said, oh, my God, I think I really have this now, is that what I believe is happening, and maybe you disagree with this to an extent, is the reason why we have this much lunacy out there, the corporations and the Koch brothers and so forth, Dick Armey and Freedom Works, is I think we're like having a contest, and it's American propagandist instead of American Idol. Who can be the biggest propagandist, and who's going to score big for the corporations? Who's the moneymaker? Who's the one that can make the most cultural impact? And, Bob, like I said before, and I really hope liberals and progressives pay attention to this, when we say it's a culture war and you see the signs right now on TV, when you have a president who – we wouldn't say this 6 years ago, Bob. We wouldn't say – you know, one day President Obama is going to mention Glenn Beck in an interview three or four times again. The one with the biggest megaphone wins. And it looks to me like Glenn Beck getting his name mentioned three times in a presidential interview, he's putting himself out there as the number one American propagandist.
Yeah, and I don't know, because I haven't heard yet from any of our overseas friends, but if the world is getting any coverage of this, they've got to be cringing.
You know, I think the thing about it is that when you look at something like this and you see what it was, you see the fact that, you know, that's interesting that you brought up the issue about money, because Tom Harden was taken to task by I think it was Congressman Tom Hayden, and he said, and he stopped Tom Hartman. He said, no, it's not about the money. It's not about the money. Glenn Beck has plenty of money.
Well, thank God, I'm not the only one.
And he, I know, but see, that's the thing about it is that this meme about the money, it's about the money. Well, I mean, look at Fox News. Fox News isn't about the money. Fox News is about putting the propaganda. And the propaganda, this is what's important. The cultural brand, and when I was listening on the radio, this is the thing that really, really got to me, was the fact when people say, well, conservatives are only a certain portion, they're just a sliver in this nation. It's mostly, liberal, but well, here's what I would say. I would say mostly liberal. I would say this nation is mostly apathetic. And when you're...
Oh, score.
And when you are mostly apathetic, to me, you're mostly rolling with the conservatives and the corporatists, and you're willing to be branded and culturally fused with that ideology and that propaganda in your head. And the problem is, Bob, is that people don't understand that. They don't understand that... They're putting their livelihoods on the
their ass are in the ringer.
Yeah, their ass is in the ringer. They're pretending. They're tweeting away, pretending that nothing's happening. And when you have something like when you have like an effect of a rally, and all of the networks just line up to just give whatever time we have, he just put out. See, that's the most dangerous thing that he did. He just put out the new normalcy. Our elections, Bob, are about to be 10 times as insane as the last election. Because that's the other thing, people. They're testing the level of normalcy. How crazy can we get? Can we get even crazier? And you can bet this is going to be seen as normal in a 10 years.
This is the same thing that toddlers do. They
right.
test limits. They push limits. And frankly, until, and this is the scary part, The right wing is beating the drums as hard and loudly as they can, David, for there to be actual violence. They want it. They want to prompt, and they would give anything. I promise you, David, they would give anything if they could just get people out into the streets, get them shooting, and then get Barack Obama to do something that they could call heavy-handed or ham-fisted or fascist or communist, you know, like putting troops in the streets or get a couple of conservatives shot down and have their own little conservative version of Kent State, if you can imagine one. They're yearning for it. They're aching for it because this is pure Machiavellian politics, David.
Well, you know, the other thing is that with the burning...
The ends justify the means.
The other thing is with the burning of the mosque in Tennessee...
There you go.
And when they announced that in the news, and they were talking about tensions and everything, I don't think people understand that all it takes is a few mosque burnings to set this country ablaze. That's all it's going to take.
Well, you know, there's already data out there that is confirmative, if that's a word, of what you're saying. Let me see if I can find it here real quick. It won't take long at all. I hope I didn't just roll past it. Hold on just a second. I think I did. It's scary because it turns out that, yeah, we've been right all along. All this not a mosque, not a controversy is proving to be one hell of a Jim Dandy recruiting tool for, fundamentalist extremists half a world away. Think Progress reporting on a story from Newsweek that Newsweek reveals the most concrete evidence yet that the campaign against these not a mosque, not a controversy is serving to bolster support for Islamic radicalism abroad. Do you remember, David, when the right-wingers like, William the Bloody Crystal and others were arguing, well, we certainly can't be letting them out of Guantanamo because they'll go back and they'll start fighting America.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, this is the reality. It's not somebody who got pissed off because of being abused in Guantanamo that's going to go back and start fighting us. These dumb bastards are doing the same thing they did during the 8 years of George W. Bush, and that is they are actively recruiting the violence against them. They are painting targets on the back of soldiers serving in Afghanistan and points elsewhere. According to the Newsweek article. Let's see. Newsweek, in an interview with the magazine, a Taliban operative going by the name of Zabihullah said that, quote, by preventing that mosque from being built, America is doing us a big favor. He goes on to explain that the anti-mosque campaign is providing the Taliban with, quote, more recruits, donations, and popular support. Another Taliban official expects that the anti-mosque campaign will provoke a, quote, new wave of terrorist trainees from the West, similar to suspected Times Square car bomber Faisal Shahzad. Zabihullah concludes, the more mosques you stop, the more jihadis we will get.
Think of all the hate crimes that are currently going on in this country that aren't labeled as hate crimes, because I think our hate crimes legislation is so lax in this respect. When you have these kind of Muslim assaults happening, and that's the reason why they're happening. They'll be happening frequently, so it's not really something you can do for the short term. It's almost like a long term you have to get the proper legislation in. But the fact that we don't have that type of legislation for that, it's going to make it even worse. And the other thing is that all of these crimes that are happening right now, the thing to remember is that, think about the ones that aren't reported. Think about the ones where the victim is too proud to announce his incident, to announce the problem that he was having. And there's, you can't even count, because it's unfathomable. Because when you put that many impressions out in the world of what Muslims are like and what Islam is all about, you're going to get the majority of the people, I'm sorry, but you're going to get a majority of the people in this country, because they don't do homework, they don't educate themselves, they're going to go the way that the propagandist masters want them to go. And the propagandist masters right now that are leading the way are from the right wing.
And what I was saying earlier about the fact that they are trying to incite violence,
yeah,
for their own political ends, because it's pure Machiavellianism, the ends justify the means. Well, you know, no one's stopping them. O'Reilly, Savage, Limbaugh, Beck, those freaks should already be standing, facing charges for accessory before the fact to any number of felonies committed by perfectly sane people who decided to go in, shoot up churches, shoot up, you know, abortion providers, things like that. But they're not. And because they're not, they are going to continue to ramp it up a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And it really is. It's like what Sandra says. It is Radio Rwanda. Now, let me sort of shed a little light on the double standard that exists, David. Okay? Now, just stand by for this. Sit down.
Sitting.
Okay. And I bring this story up in conversation with you because, you know, you're hyper-connected with Facebook and Twitter, and you follow it, and Reddit and Dig and all of that stuff. So, you get the social networking world.
Right.
Okay, so we've got right-wingers who have actually incited violence, you know, throat slitting of cabbies, things like that. None of these right-wing hate mongers who are calling the shots have even been charged with a crime. All right? Meanwhile, you've heard me talk about, probably, an activist who is down in the Coal River Valley. This guy has been a dedicated activist and rabble rouser, but nonviolent for almost his entire adult life. His name is Mike Rozelle. All right, Rozelle has protested environmental atrocities all over this country, and he is part and parcel of one of the movements against mountaintop removal down in the Coal River Valley. I know him. He's a good guy. Intelligent, great passion, not a violent bone in his body. All right? Dig this. There's a guy named Rod Coronado. And Rod Coronado has a past. And he had done, you know, he's done some stuff in behalf of animal rights and environmental rights, and the government came down on him hard. But he got out on supervised release, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got a Facebook page, Rod Coronado does. Well, he did have one, because he's back in prison now, David.
Yeah.
You know what he's back in prison for?
I can't wait.
He friended Mike Rozelle. in monitor. This is what the sick, twisted little fascist the termagant wrote, who found reason to throw him back in the clink. You know, on our dime, we're talking about federal prison here.
Right.
Okay. In monitoring Mr.
Coronado's Facebook account, this officer found Michael Rozelle to be a friend of Mr. Coronado. According to FBI intelligence and a criminal history investigation of Michael Rozelle, he is a well-known environmental activist who has a history of condoning direct action and violence as a means of protest or demonstration. Bullshit.
He is not violent. And yeah, there's been protests, but the last I checked, that's protected conduct under the First Amendment to the Constitution. But Rod Coronado is back in prison because he friended somebody on Facebook. They asked Rozelle, and let's see, Rozelle said, I sent him a friend request because someone had suggested that I friend him. And given that I've known Rod for quite a while, I did. I guess he hit the accept button.
Wow.
And he's back in prison. For that. Because he's a desperate threat to the public safety of the we the people of the United States.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile, anybody from BP... the Don Blankenship is still running free with the blood of 29 innocents on his hands. But Rod Coronado must go to jail for being Facebook friends with Mike Rozelle. Jesus Christ, it scared me to death because I looked over at my Facebook page. I've got nearly 1,000 friends, most of whom don't listen to this show and most of whom I don't know.
Right.
But you know what? If somebody sends me a friend request, I click confirm. And until last weekend, it had never been abused. But that should serve as a wake-up call for anybody. If that's not just a little picture of fascism in America, well, by God, maybe fascism didn't come here wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. Maybe it came here wrapped in a firewall and carrying a laptop. I mean, this is the damnedest. I read this over the weekend, David. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. Wallach, the probation officer, Rhonda J. Wallach, she said, this officer found Facebook posts from March 14th, April 27th, and May 3rd, 2010, showing Mr. Coronado utilized a computer or computer-related device to post information on Facebook. According to computer monitoring records, Mr. Coronado's monitored computer had no data recorded from February 8th to May 10th, 2010. In March 2010, Mr. Coronado advised this officer that his computer had crashed and that he was no longer using or accessing the monitored computer. So let's review.
Yeah.
Having a Facebook friend that the government has decided it doesn't like and some probation officer can just make shit up about. And having a computer crash is enough to put you in federal prison.
Well, all I can say to this, and then I will be gone, is I hope you enjoy Anthony Bourdain, and I really do wish the Koch brothers put together that Restore Stephen Baldwin rally.
Yeah, I do too. No one deserves it quite like Stephen Baldwin.
Bob, I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, take it easy, David. Bye now.
All right, later.
Sorry, David, I didn't mean to jump off and rant at you, but it just blows me away. That's guilt by association. While these dingleberries at Beckapalooza, White Stock, whatever you want to call it, while they were standing around, turning away from the darkness in the White House and facing west toward the Mormon temple, hallelujah, praise, moron, a man was sent back to federal prison on nothing but guilt by association. That should make little... should. On me, it makes little beads of cold sweat pop out. Because while they're worried, our Constitution's being trampled by that dark-skinned man who wants to give money away to more dark-skinned people, and America's going to hell, and George Washington would cry. Real freedoms are being trampled. And They don't care. They don't care. And let's keep things going. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Fancy, what's up?
Hey there. I got a few notes. We're going to go lickety-split through these things. I think on the Glenn Beck, we're looking at, I have a friend who always said give time time. And I'm looking at, you know, Father Coughlin and Howard Stern and Amy...
Simple McPherson.
McPherson. Glenn Beck's going to be another blip in history. He's got the passing parade today. I loved... David's such a smart little dude sometimes that the abstraction that, you know, we did everything. Our focus is totally on this thing, and then, oh, my, what's that?
Yeah, well, and see, but see, Fancy, my interest in this, in White Stock was not... And I hope I haven't conveyed that it was on Beck himself. It's a cultural manifestation.
Well, okay, two things here. Hartman seemed to think that it was an idea that got away from him. They pretty much said, okay, let's do a kickoff for Beck's new book. And, hey, cool, we're going to do it at, like, Washington at the memorial there. And, you know, somebody nailed down a date. And then they suddenly realized, whoops, we got the money.
I don't believe that for a minute.
You think?
No, not for a minute.
Well, he was...
I believe it was deliberate, and I understand how dangerous it is for me to use that word believe, but I do.
The plan was to kick off his book. Then suddenly, well, we got to make it bigger, so we're going to make it we'll have a beneficiary of a charity, a veterans families charity. And it grew, but I'm just looking at this boy. You know, it's okay. If people, how many people came home from this and said, "My God, it was awesome. There really was a miracle." As Glenn spoke, we could see the halo around his head. You know, that. We really felt that God was giving us a message through Glenn Beck. But no, you know, people went because it was all over-promoed. And he gave them a nice little sermon. But I got a feeling, a friend of mine used to say, the Bible says again and again and again, it came to pass, it came to pass. It never says it came to stay. And I think Glenn is just part of that passing parade. Now, very quickly, I want to recommend a movie. When you and God, I love Juanita. When you and Juanita were talking, if you haven't seen it, and for all the folks out there, I think it's a 1997 movie with Robert Duvall called The Apostle.
I've seen it.
Is he awesome or what?
It is awesome, and it's a very disturbing film.
Yes, but Duvall is so good.
Anytime I see Robert Duvall in a movie, the first thing I think of is, well, damn, didn't Boo Radley just grow up nice?
He's an awesome, he was holiness in this, but the holiness and the Pentecostal people that he had were real.
Well, the other movie I would suggest, and I can't remember the name of it, is a Steve Martin film where he plays a TV preacher. You know, with the little earpiece and all of that stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. And the name's not coming to me either, but...
Underappreciated, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, the and the way he's getting the cues from his shell out in the audience.
Yeah.
Somebody
will email me and tell me the name of the film in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, beautifully done, beautiful piece. Now, close up for a minute. I started smoking when I was a teenager. I stopped when I was in my mid-60s. My prayer, and I mean that metaphorically, was help me to be a non-smoker and help me not to be a pain in the ass about it. And so I don't think anybody stop when you feel like it, when you're ready. It took me long enough to get ready. And I still love it. I love the smell. I'll go out and stand with the smokers outside the restaurant just to get my second hand.
Oh, yeah, the contact buzz, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do this.
It's like not taking a bag to the ZZ Top concert and still coming out higher than Jesus.
Okay, so what I did, and I said, I'm going to make this easy on myself, and if it gets too painful, we're just going to turn around with this. But I'm telling folks, if you want to try this, it was a good thing for me. A lot of communities have something called community acupuncture. And community acupuncture is, one, a sliding scale on fees. So if you're really having difficulties, they'll work something out with you. And one of the things about community acupuncture is it's everybody together. There's this large room. And when I was going, there were 12 recliners, and you went in and found your recliner and tipped back, and then Keith or Larry would come and very quietly, and it kind of, oh, and there's kind of Asian meditation music going on there, and they put the needles in me, which doesn't hurt, and my line is I go immediately from transcendental meditation into transcendental sleep.
You are a pro, you know that?
I am so out. And I went three times a week and then twice a week. Within 6 weeks or so, I'd stopped smoking. And it wasn't that painful. But enough said about that. It worked for me. If it works for somebody else, it's a good deal.
By the way, the Steve Martin movie is 1992's Leap of Faith.
Leap of Faith.
It plays a faith healer named Jonas Nightingale.
Was Marty Feldman in that? What was the one with Marty Feldman that had to do with...
No, but it's quite a cast. Steve Martin, Deborah Winger, Lolita Davidovich, Liam Neeson, Meatloaf, Philip Seymour Hoffman, early.
Oh, I am so a Philip Seymour Hoffman fan. Okay, so we got the apostle out. We got community acupuncture. Oh, I want to say, incidentally, President Obama is a Muslim. I saw it in print the other day as I was waiting in line in the grocery store on the front page of the Globe.
Well, you know, I've known it ever since I saw that picture of him. And
since the Globe told me there are people from outer space who want to eat my brain.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I've known it ever since I saw it on the online edition of the Weekly World News where he met with Osama bin Laden and the alien. You know, the same one who met with Bill Clinton and the same one who met with George H.W. Bush.
It is. You know, golly, can we distract or what? This is a nation of, distraction is just...
Well, and I think that's where David was going, and I think he's correct.
It is frightening. It's frightening that what I want to believe trumps any reasonable, rational argument or information. I remember years ago I was reading a book, and it hit me at some point. The philosophy in this book is pretty interesting, and he's making a really good argument. And if I agree with him, I'm going to have to give up some real core beliefs that I'm holding on to. And do I want to? And so I did the only reasonable thing. I lost the book. I never finished it. But that feeling of when you suddenly know you're going to have to reevaluate whatever it is you choose to believe. And I happen to think it's a really good thing. I go to my therapist and I say, probe me. Come on. My outward is broccoli, but probe me and let's discover something I've told myself that isn't true. And I don't think many people want to do that or do that. Now, one other point before I get on here, and you know.
Well, I have to share a little moment of horrifying moment with you. I just had an email from Jude out in Washington State.
Hi, Jude.
And she said that Robert Duvall, this actor, was on Mike Huckabee's program on the Fox channel this past week. Oh my God, Bob, have we lost him too? Ew.
That gives you something to conjure with.
Indeed.
Amazing. That's amazing. Now, I've told you we've got our little anchor baby there in Germany.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You're a Deutsche anchor.
Yes. My son said, I said, so you get any sleep? He says, well, yeah. He says he's really kind of like a little hippie dude. He just kind of goes, that's cool. Every now and then he'll go, I'm hungry, feed me. But he's not raging. He's not demanding. He's really a sweet little dude. So I said to my son, you know, you back at work. He said, well, he says, the way it works out here, and now every state in Germany is not the same.
And by the way, that would be ein Ankerkinder. In German. Der Ankerkinder.
The Ankerkinder. That's my boy.
Or maybe der Ankerkind.
So so my son says, I said, you're back to work. He said, well, he says, we got some choices here. He says, they give us 16 months maternity/paternity leave. And the way we're going to break it up is Uta's going to take the first year off, and then I'm going to take 4 months as a house husband. That's cool. He said, well, we could do it differently. He says, we could do it like...
10 and 6, 8 and 8.
Yeah. And then I said...
With 3, you get egg roll.
So then he says, and you know what's amazing? He says, you know, Uta works for... She works for the state. She's in museum management. He says, but Dave's a contract labor. He's a teacher for an agency that teaches English. And he's a contract worker. 2, he's not a citizen. And 3, they're not married. And is this family friendly or what?
Yeah, that sounds like actual family values, last I checked.
That's just incredibly family friendly. And he says, where they are, there's plenty of child care available, good child care. And if they want to start preschool, when they want to start, it's available and it's there for them. And I'm saying you guys stay.
Oh, don't come home.
This is so good.
No, stay in civilization.
Yeah, the medical care was marvelous.
Yeah, I mean, the child will go to school. The child will be not bilingual, but multilingual, English, German, maybe Russian, maybe French, Spanish, who knows? Turkish?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's you know, got to have a lot of languages if we're going to be peacemakers.
Now there's a toaster comment. Got to have a lot of languages if we're going to be peacemakers. Amen to that. Fancy, I got to roll. We're almost out of time.
Okay, dude, it was wonderful hearing Juanita and Jim thanks a lot. And you guys have a good week.
All right.
Best Agnes.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Fancy.
Bye-bye now.
Bye now. And let's see here. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Okay. Well, that wraps it up then. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for Moran Monday on the Horn with our wonderful new Moran Monday music, courtesy of Scott in Sweden. What a conversation. 3 solid hours of great conversation tonight. Listen, we are about, $700 away from making our monthly goal. Getting awfully close. We have one last day. Anybody out there, or any gathering together of you, like I said, if everybody who listens to this program would send $10, I could shut up about all of this. There's a PayPal button and a snail mail address at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. I've gotten some emails this evening that I want to make sure that I share on tomorrow's program, so I'll do it then, because a couple of great trenchant observations coming along. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, the entire unpaid staff of the Horn, from Lottie in the chat room to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com is our Southeast correspondent and growing. You can also read him at CrooksandLiars.com. One of my go-to sites for any given program. Our op-ed correspondent with a magnificent new piece on the way, coming soon, as they say, is Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox is our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, and many, many other hats he wears as well. And we thank him for all that he does, in addition to one of these days getting his show back on the air. That really is a goal. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, makes all the streaming happen and never sends a bill. We're trying to, you know, part of the reason we upped the monthly fundraising goal is to try to take care of the bill over at White Rose Society. That's part of the $700 we still have to raise. All of this also happens by virtue of the continued support of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Also, AppalachiaRising.org. If you can be there September 25th to 27th, it's going to be a magnificent, inspiring occasion, especially the 27th itself. But the whole weekend will be wonderful. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Favorite day of the week. It is Monday. Well, why is it my favorite day of the week? Because after 2 days of enforced silence, well, I'm ready to get back behind the microphone and get back after it, doggone it. And don't we have plenty to work with tonight? Oh, my God, the weekend was like a gift from the gods. If, that is, the gods are in charge of... Oh, I don't know. If the gods are in charge of, yeah, morons! Yes, indeedy. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get over here. Stop fiddle farting around with the cotton candy and the candy apples. You're never going to shoot out all that. Shoot that target out, that little red star with that crooked barrel BB gun. Get over here. Get over here. Come on over. Come off the midway. Come over to the main attraction tent. It's Moran Monday on the horn. We have morans in abundance. We have, in fact, 87,000 morans standing in 90-degree heat on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on a Saturday for Beckapalooza or White Stock or... whatever you care to call it. What they were was a bunch of beckerheads.
And we've got them all for you right here on Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell the Morans without this program. You will not believe your ears. You will be shocked. You will be stunned. You will be amazed. For no charge at all, you can slip behind the curtain here and see the Morans. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Mothers of small children and pregnant women are advised not to come in. It is that shocking. Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Don't you love the new Moran Monday music? I love the new Moran Monday music. Our good buddy Scott in Sweden sent that along. Just to add, so I wouldn't have to improvise anything. I'm so musically benighted. I had no idea that that was March of the Gladiators. But it is. It's March of the Gladiators. I don't know who wrote it. I'm sure Scott will tell me once he hears the podcast. Thank you, Scott, for sending that along. That helps out immensely. But then again, I didn't know. I just thought that was circus music or carnival music. Whatever it is, I think it was played on a calliope. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. God. But then again, I think we're to be forgiven. Because to the same extent that I, Moran that I am, didn't know that that was the March of the Gladiators, I'm pretty damn sure that the folks attending Beckapalooza, Whitestock, whatever, didn't know that this was by Aaron Copland. Because it was played again and again. Well, it was played with some frequency. Yeah, that. At the beckoning. There can be only one. Listen to that, Marvelline. Glenn Beck's playing that Beef It's What's for Dinner music. That, of course, is Aaron Copland's Rodeo. In particular, I do believe it is Hoedown. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did a whale of a job on this, too. When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, It's What's for Demagogue. Yeah, no, they didn't know that was Aaron Copland. And to the same extent, when they were introducing their everyday heroes or whatnot, well, they didn't know this was Aaron Copland either, but I sure hope Aaron Copland's lawyers were paying attention. And you know what? Beck is such a miserable cheapskate, he couldn't even hire an orchestra to play this. Are there no right-wing orchestras? No, there aren't. Not unless you want them to all be on banjo and jew's harp. Jug band, washboard. What's the difference between a banjo and an onion, as Lee reminded us one night? Nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. Yeah, a lot of fanfare for the common man there as well. Some things do stick out in my memory from Whitestock this past weekend. One of them being one of the opening prayers. I was just blown away. I was not spiritually moved at all during any of this. I was, the only speaking in tongues I was doing was a sort of Tourette's-like swearing that was punctuated by Agnes's own swearing, because I've found that the only way I can make her rest and continue to recuperate in bed is if I sit there right next to her and it don't get up. And so Saturday morning I made her watch The Beckoning. And she was about to bust into full-on Tourette's. Bob, won't you turn off this black stag and new knot pole frazzleack and black stag running last and dirt laughing? Honey, this is part of my job. I have to watch this.
And I did, but I did. It, as sick as it may seem, I wanted to watch it. Because, among other things, I knew that I would not get the full sense of it unless I watched the whole thing.